Experience the unconventional, the unpredictable, and the completely unorthodox. The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
I just want to be getting used to that. This is the last one.
I know. I'm sorry and sad and a little flaccid about that news.
Yeah, well, it may not be for the last time. You never know.
What do you have in mind? What are you going to do to Ian?
Well, I have many plans. I don't want to reveal my itinerary. I have some SAS training, and some of the training revolves around, you know, keeping your cards close to your chest. You don't broadcast your itinerary. You don't do the usual things. You don't take the usual routes. There are plans in place. Oh, that reminds me. He's going to be back in the country about 11:30. So from 11:30 on tonight, if you could make me sound brilliant.
Okay.
0344-499-1000. If you're thinking of giving us a ring and you're one of the good callers, hold off until about 11:30.
That's that'll be right. Magic. Yeah, hold fire on that one.
But I'd love to hear from you. You can talk to us about all sorts of stuff. I want to talk about this thing Condi's done.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of time for Jason Condi. He's a really sweet soul. But what a plum.
What's he up to?
So, probably best that we've got a clip for you, right? You can hear what he said. Some of the conversation he had this morning on morning television with Piers Morgan, who tried to rip him a new one, but as usual, kind of, it was Piers Morgan. But I just think that he's apologised for this now, Jason Condi. He's released this really kind of penitent statement saying that he apologises for any hurt caused and it was the wrong thing to say. But you know and I know that this isn't news to a lot of people who work in sport and a lot of people who follow sport. Female commentators are not popular. Here's what Condi said.
Personal preference, I prefer to hear a male voice when watching football. For 90 minutes of hearing a high-pitched tone isn't really what I'd like to hear. And when there's a moment of drama, as there often is in football, that moment actually I think needs to be done with a slightly lower voice.
Right, high-pitched tone.
High-pitched tone. Yeah, all that squealing.
Can't help ourselves, can we?
I know.
I do get excited sometimes and my voice does raise in modulation, but I think most human beings do, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, how dare you have emotion and exhibit that emotion? I don't know. I just think he's damaged from a lifetime of conditioning. A lot of people are just what you're used to. I mean, in North Korea, they're used to that crazy lady who reads the news.
Oh, yeah, like the woman in pink.
The woman in pink, like, it's like a combination of, like, booming, but also on the verge of tears. Just triumphant tears at the same time. And they think that's normal. So all I can say to this guy is you can get used to anything and you might as well start trying now.
But, right, that prejudice is there. And I can tell you that having walked through the TalkSport office a few times and heard them discussing what's been going on, because obviously for him, he's faced an absolute storm this afternoon. And that's kind of prompted his apology. I'm not saying he's not sorry. I'm just saying that he got a lot of flack for it. And there was a lot of joshing and manly ribbing and talking about how I don't think it's that crazy an opinion that he has. I think it's quite commonly held. And I think there is some resentment there. And of course, there's resentment, especially when we're talking about television, right? Everyone's looking over their shoulders and thinking, why are they getting the job and I'm not? So for a woman to get a job that has been traditionally a man's domain, there's always going to be questions asked. And I don't think, and in fact, I know that it's not a crazily unpopular opinion that he has. It's whether or not people say it out loud. And I think it's interesting that he said it out loud. And I think the interesting point, there are interesting points to discuss about it.
Well, I'd like to discuss the fact that it's a tedious opinion to have, I think, because it's just so, I don't know, it's just discounting people who are good at their job and professionals and know what they're talking about. And
because by his own admission, when he was talking this morning, he said it's not about a lack of experience or expertise. It's purely about the tone of someone's voice.
Well, that's kind of interesting. It's funny that this just came up because a couple of days ago I was listening to this really interesting documentary on part of that Archive on 4 series on BBC Radio. And this one episode was about the history of women's voices on radio. And it was all about throughout the 20th century, how the public or in fact, it wasn't even the public. It was the people putting together these radio shows that, you know, how they had to kind of talk themselves into allowing women to mm-hmm. broadcast on certain subjects. So when they started the BBC in the 20s, the idea was, well, we could never have a woman delivering the news. I mean, you know, at most she could come in and talk about planting a flower or something, or maybe cooking a pot roast, that might be acceptable. And then the funny thing was that during World War II, when the country was at, you know, high crisis point, that was when women actually, like women across all of society, started moving into roles of, you know, more professional visibility mm-hmm. because A, men weren't around, and B, the men who were abroad and fighting in the war wanted to hear the comfort of home. They wanted to hear a woman's voice. They wanted to think about their wives, their girlfriends, their mothers, their sisters. And it was accepted that, you know, it's really great to have all of these flavors and textures on the radio.
There was even a sort of fetishization of a glamorous woman. You know, put your lipstick on and go and work in the factory. You know, remember yeah. those, what's her name, the Rosie Riveter
Rosie
posters
Riveter.
And stuff. But, right, interestingly, when the guys came home, it was pretty much, okay, girls, back to the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at advertising and commercialization and marketing at that time, it really did do the propaganda number of like, hey, that apron is very frilly. Don't you want to just strap that one on, ladies, and bake those muffins? The documentary that I was listening to about the history of women's voices further said that as late as 1972, the BBC did a study, in-house study, to talk about the feasibility mm-hmm. of having women hosting the news bulletins on television. And they came to the conclusion that women were just too emotional. And therefore, if they read sad news, they were liable to cry.
Oh, my.
And if they read happy news, they would just be too gosh darn bubbly for anybody to cope. So, but a few years later, they had Angela Rippon come on, and I think we've never looked back. But I think in terms of sportscasters who are women, I don't see what the problem is. Claire Balding doesn't have any issues.
No, and I also think that, you know, and it has been pointed out, and I don't necessarily just want to go for Jason Condy because he's an easy target, right? But his voice isn't the deepest. It's not about, come on, let's be honest.
He's a high talker? Is that what you're saying?
He's got a soft, fairly high voice.
Well, here's the other thing is that men are just as squeaky as anyone
oh
when
God.
It comes to that goal time. You know, when they're having a goalgasm, it's squeal-a-rama.
Yeah, we could say that we find those voices quite abrasive, all that shouting.
I find it a little migraine-inducing.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I mean, 90 minutes of that pitch, heavens to Betsy, we're going to be pulling our hair out. But, you know, let's have a conversation about it. You may feel like, you know, I'm going to admit that there is a residual thing. I don't particularly like hearing women doing that kind of thing. Admit to it. We'll have a conversation about it. We're not going to, you know, haul you up into a public area and shame you, but I think it's worth having a conversation because it's still obviously quite a prevalent idea. And it's not a new one, right? Women's voices being shrill. I mean, that's been a stick to beat women with who have the audacity to want to put themselves in either prominent or authoritative positions for years.
Well, Margaret Thatcher.
Lauren Bacall was told she must lower her voice. That's why she had that voice, you know.
Yes.
That's why she took to smoking a lot of cigarettes.
Yeah, she had, and also it's just like, standing on a cliff top and shouting off the edge of it.
Yeah.
But when they do look at the pitches of women's voices over the years, it does seem that women have gotten more deeper, especially in Britain. You guys were all very, like, even if you listen to shows like The Crown or something, or you listen to public service announcements mm-hmm. from the mid-century, women certainly had a higher, more... I don't know what that sound, kind of strangulated, constipated sound.
Ooh, terribly, terribly like that, you know, and they would talk like that and they couldn't help themselves, but they had opinions, but they wanted to deliver them in a non-threatening way.
You are turning me on right now. That is doing something strange.
But you know, like those old movies, and you think, even when you watch old footage of people talking from like the 1970s, those voices were still quite high.
Yes, quite fluttery.
And fast, you know.
Yes, fast. They had it, maybe because they just had to quickly say their piece because they knew they were going to be
shut down
in a minute. Wait a minute, is that a lady talking?
Yeah. What,
you just hold your horses there.
The book I read about Lauren Bacall, she was advised that in order to keep attention, it was about lowering your voice so people had to lean in and talking slower because women had this tendency to quickly get it all in, you know, and be as high as possible.
Yeah. Well, it worked for her. She did
worked
a good
Thatcher.
Job. But... you know, you can easily, you could pick another example, the breathy approach of Marilyn Monroe,
mm-hmm.
And then all of the cheesecake bombshells who aped her. So there was that sort of trend. And of course, now what we have in America, thanks to America on the West Coast, we have vocal fry. So that kind of like you just talk like you have throat cancer.
Yeah.
And that's considered, I don't know, appealing. I think it's stupid.
You hear a lot of that on the NPR radio.
Yes. So on National Public Radio, yeah. This American Life.
They'll be commenting things. So we went over there to have a word with him about it.
And then. Yeah. I don't know what that is. I mean, men have it as well, but that did start. I moved over to the States for 12 years, starting at the beginning of this thousand-year patch that we're now in, 2000. I was over there. And I did notice in Los Angeles that the Valley Girl upspeak had moved on, and we were getting into the vocal fry.
So the Valley Girl thing is the talking like that, right?
When you go up, and then oh my God, I cannot believe it. That was so grody.
Everything is a question.
Everything is a question. Everything is elided onto the next thing.
Mind you, my daughter started doing that. My 9-year-old, it's a thing at school, and we'll be talking like this, and I did this morning, and I kind of have to, I know that every generation has their verbal tics, right?
Yes.
But I also know that no one ever got taken seriously talking like that.
I have noticed in the last few years that people, even women on the radio, I haven't really heard men doing it, but women doing it a little bit, doing the upspeak. And I don't know if that's considered youthful or appealing.
What it suggests to me is that I'm not, it's that thing again of, you know, the same reason why people spoke like that was that I'm trying to be as feminine as possible and I'm not attacking you with my opinion. So I will just curl it away at the end.
I'm not really sure of what I'm talking about. I'm no expert. I'm no expert.
Stuff blokes don't tend to do.
No, they don't need to do that.
Should we talk to some men?
Yeah.
All right. Well, pick one or two.
Two.
Let's have Mike then. Hiya, Mike.
Mike.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm really starstruck at speaking to Katie Puttrick.
I know, so am I.
I used to watch, I've forgotten his name, sorry, it was a long time ago, this show you did on a Sunday morning.
Oh, yes. It's called The Sunday Show. The Sunday Show.
Yeah, well, there we go. At the time, I was about 12, 13, and it felt really edgy at that point. Maybe, I mean, if I watched it back now, I don't know if it would.
It was kind of edgy. I mean, it was a spoofy news current affairs show.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the point of Jason Cundy, I think many of us are quite innately prejudiced.
Yeah.
But then we're quite bad at keeping that in check. I'll give you an example of myself. When I hear, and please let me finish this sentence, when I hear about same-sex couples adopting, instinctually, I think that's bad. But then I can kind of check myself to say, well, it's not. And I don't, I mean, I suppose I do know why I feel like that. My parents were baby boomers, my really working-class area and a bit older. So it's their kind of beliefs that were put upon me growing up that makes me feel that way. But I've got kind of checks and balances in place to know that's a really wrong thing to think, if you know what I mean. And I think people like Jason Cundy are missing that a little bit. And also there's a reluctance on his part to acknowledge it's just different as opposed to wrong.
Well, also, like you said about, you know, you recognise where your opinions come from or where your prejudice that you manage to talk yourself around from comes from. Mm. That's the world that Jason Cundy's grown up in. And that's the world, like it or not, that we're still in. And, you know, as I said, walking through the office earlier on, he's not the only one out there that thinks it's a bit silly having a woman doing the commentary.
Well, I think also you made a good point about the fact that it's just different. It's not necessarily better or worse. It's different. And people do get into a habit, don't they, of what they're familiar with and what they're comfortable with.
Yeah, the way it's always been.
you missed the best part of that interview, which is where they did a test on his voice. And the pitch of his voice is the same as a woman's voice.
Yeah.
And then his dad's going, well, I'm a pundit. It's very different to be a commentator. Uh-huh. Do you know, I think it's a bit of that thing like, like Will Storm, and a little bit, it's a bit of, I think you might have mentioned it, Kate. It's cognitive dissonance as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not, we don't step back a lot. We're very bad at stepping back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just that, it's everything. Well, has it... I feel like that's become more prominent in society over the past 10 years. From like 97 to 2008, where everything was kind of positive, it started to get a bit better. But then over the past 10 years, it's just... I sometimes think it's a lot about, as the baby boomers die off, there's a bitterness in society developing. I don't know if the two are correlated. Maybe I'm going a bit weird here, a bit too abstract. But there's people keep getting told that things are bad. And is it to do with people dying off? Is it to do with this rising nationalism? Are they all interlinked?
Everyone's picking a side these days, aren't they? And it's not fashionable to admit that you don't know something, or you don't know how you feel about something, or you're not absolutely on one side or the other.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about social media is that you're compelled to have a hot take on every single subject. And if you don't have your own hot take, well, then you can retweet someone else's hot take.
Yeah.
And it is that whole thing that Kath just said, picking a side and standing up for it without any critical thinking, it seems like.
Isn't that it depresses me? I've got a daughter who's 4, nearly 5. And when I see stuff like that Jason Kunyon said, and really that's just it's quite high profile, but it's probably a lesser example, really, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
It really saddens me. It genuinely makes me feel sad that my daughter is still going into a world where I know that her gender will potentially be a stumbling block for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad, isn't it? It breaks my heart a little bit.
At least it's getting called out more now, even though some people are never going to like that.
Yeah, but I sometimes think, in this same instance, it emboldens people as well. Social media, which really is quite toxic, I'd love to swear, I won't, I know you've got a dumb button. You see these people, he's white, he's women,
yeah.
They should be in the kitchen.
Yeah, and then you look at their bio and they're all proud dads, you know, you think you liked a woman at least once.
Yeah.
No, but the worst thing is when you see them and they've got pictures, I don't know why you put pictures of your kids on Twitter anyway,
no.
But when you see them with pictures of their daughters and they're still spouting it.
Yeah, I mean, talk about the dissonance, the cognitive dissonance right there. It's like they're not even connecting the dots in their own life.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Hey, Mike, nice to speak to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for giving us a ring. If you want to give us a call, 0344 499 1000. We'd love to hear from you.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle. Speech Radio with a difference. Talk Radio.
Hey, Philip.
G'day, ladies. This is Wally Dingo with your Aussie Rules Roundup. In weekend action, it was the Giants over the Lions, North Melbourne over the Bulldogs, Collingwood over Carlton, Essendon over West Coast Eagles, Port Melbourne over Melbourne, and Hawthorn over the Suns. I'll see you next week. Till then, check out an Aussie film classic on YouTube, Sunday Too Far Away. So check out those sheep shearers. See ya.
Thanks very much, you flaming Yahoo. He's been waiting 20 minutes to do that.
I don't know if I caught any of that. I think his voice was perhaps too high and shrill.
Imagine 90 minutes of that. Flipping it. 0344 499 1000. I've got loads of stuff to talk about. There's a thing that happened to me before I left, just as I was leaving from work today. And I could do with a hand kind of unpicking it. Right, you know, I've got two little girls and one is 7 and one is 9. And the 7-year-old was sitting on the sofa with her granddad, who was looking after her before my husband gets home. I know, I'm a terrible mother. And they were sitting together and my eldest was on the laptop. And I went to give the little one a kiss, say goodbye to her, give her a kiss, and went over to the dining room table where they're all in the same room. It's all kind of open plan. And I went over to the dining room table where my eldest was, and she nearly shot out of her chair. I'll come over there. Don't come around here. It's fine. And I was thinking, right, okay, what's on this laptop? You know, your hackles go up and you think, right, I'm missing something here and it's not good. So I said, what are you doing? Nothing. Let me just come round there and give you a kiss from round there.
Oh.
So I inch round, flip the laptop round. She's playing this game called Roblox. I don't know if you've heard of it. Loads of kids her age are playing it. And it's kind of, there are various different games within the sort of series of the style of the thing. And from what I understand, there's like a survival game where you can sort of build a camp and all that stuff. And then there's also kind of a shopping game. And this one that she was playing is kind of a Sims thing where you have a job and you have to build a house and all this sort of stuff. So, and she's been playing this on and off for quite a long time. And we thought we'd set the computer so that there was no chance that anyone could talk to her on it. There's a chat facility on it where it can be open to everyone. We thought we'd set it so that only her friends with password could do it. Maybe I'm being naive. We thought we'd got it. Yeah. Clearly we didn't, because what I saw when I flipped the screen round was her little character in a room with another really blocky sort of basic characters. This male character there, and out of his mouth was a speech bubble that said, "Okay, honey."
Okay, honey.
Yeah. So I said, she went, "Oh, I don't even know what that is. I don't know what I'm doing in there. I don't even know what that person is doing. I'm ignoring them." I went, "Whoa, okay."
Huh.
What I'm hearing is this kind of verbal diarrhea that is the voice of someone who's been busted.
Yeah.
So I said, "Right, take a breath. Let's have the truth about what's going on here." "Oh, it's just, I'm playing a game with my friend Ellie, and it was just a silly thing, and we're just having a chat in the game." Okay. And I'm thinking, I'm smelling bullshine, and I'm smelling it strong. So I said to her, "Okay, I'm going to ring Ellie's mum and make sure everything's cool there." "No, don't do that. Why shouldn't I do that? Am I going to discover that Ellie's not playing the game?" She went, "No, it's not Ellie."
Okay.
Okay, so first layer unpeeled. "So let's start again. What's going on? Who are you playing with? Who's this person?" "Oh, it's, and why did you act so weird?" is what I said to her.
Yeah.
I said, and I'm trying to keep it as calm as possible. I'm not going nuts. Her heart is beating out of her chest, and I can see that she is properly upset. It's a boy called Oliver that I am at school with. She gave me his surname. And he said some swears to me because he says I'm not very good at playing it. I said, "All right, what kind of swears are we talking?" And she said, "You know, S-H-1-T. And I went, "Okay, that's not very nice, is it? So what, he's swearing at you because you're not playing, right?" Explain to me the scenario. And she couldn't. And I said, "Okay, well, maybe I should speak to Oliver's mum." "Well, you don't even know Oliver's mum." I went, "Baby, I'm a journalist. I can find Oliver's mum in like 5 minutes. I know a mum network. You know, I know exactly who I can call to get her number."
You were going to ice out Oliver's mum existed.
Yeah, well, I've seen her. I know she exists. Okay. If I didn't find her on the phone, I could speak to her in the playground the next day.
Right.
Very foolhardy. And it transpires, of course, it's not Oliver.
Okay.
It transpires it's someone she doesn't know who has, in her words, forced her to go into this virtual room with him. And I said, "What do you mean forced?" "Well, he said he'd report me if I didn't do what he said."
Report her how and where?
Exactly,
and to whom.
Exactly my question. And she said, "Oh, well, you know, they'll get me blocked out of the game for not abiding by the rules or something." I went, "Well, you know how silly that is, that you don't have to speak to anyone." She said, "He also said he would find where I live."
Oh, that is so creepy.
At which point I'm like, right. My finger goes over. It's like shut down, absolute shut down. She goes nuts. "What are you doing?" I said, "You do not want to be playing this game. We need to work out how we make this computer absolutely watertight safe. I don't want you talking to randoms on the computer." She's going nuts, absolutely nuts.
Is she going nuts like she's upset at you or she's angry?
She's angry that I've stopped her game. It doesn't feel to me like she's angry because she wanted to carry on talking to this person.
Right.
I feel like she's maybe a bit embarrassed, but the main thing is anger that she wants to carry on playing.
Right. So she's sucked into this, whatever this rapport is, this relationship that she's having with this.
I'm kind of worried that this may not be a one-time thing and she feels like she wants to talk to this person. I don't know. I don't know what's gone on. You know, in the space of five minutes, I got told at least four or five lies. Like, she's covering something up.
It's like talking to Donald Trump.
Oh, my God, yeah, telling me it didn't happen. I can see it's happening, you know.
Yeah.
So we go and sit upstairs and I try and calm her down because there's no point in her getting het up about it. I'm more interested in why she feels like she has to lie to me about it, what's underneath it. And I kind of explained as gently as I could to a nine-year-old that there are people online, and she knows this stuff, there are people online who will pretend to be kids who are probably not, And if what she's telling me is right, this is the sort of language that some older men use in order to make particularly girls, but kids in general, do stuff they don't want to do. And I said, and, you know, telling me fibs about it just helps him suck you deeper into this sort of big cover-up, and you could end up in a lot of trouble. I said, he can't tell where you live, but he could make you feel like that. And you don't want to be feeling like that. And
yeah,
I said,
threatened.
And yeah, if you feel threatened, you might tell him stuff that you don't want to tell him. I said, so let's just cut this loose now. You're never going to let me play it again. I said, that's highly probable. I said, one thing for sure, though, I need to find out how I safeguard this computer. And also, we need to talk about, you know, how you look after yourself as well, because you know that you're not supposed to be talking to randoms on the online. You know it's not safe to do that. We've had this conversation before. So by the time I left, she's very penitent and everything, but still pissed off that she can't play the computer. And I know that it's going to be a running theme throughout the week. I'm really hurt that she's lied to me. I'm also really scared about what she's lied to me about. And so all I can do now is, you know, put my practical head on and say, right, now what do we do to this computer to make sure that there are, I'm sure there's software that I can put on the computer that means that she won't be able to go on games where there's the chat thing that can't be switched off.
Yeah.
I need to educate myself a bit more about this. So I'm kind of reaching out to you, dear listener, if you know anything about this stuff, and if you know about Roblox and what could possibly be going on there, if you've got any experience of anything like this, I could really do with picking your brains about it. I'll be honest, I'm a bit lost. All I'm thinking at this point is, I feel like throwing the laptop out the window, but that's not the answer. It's a really important resource, and she has learned a lot from it, just as much as I'm learning a lot from it now. So if you could help me out, 03444991000. But I mean, my instinct is, my God.
It's so creepy. I mean, of course, unfortunately, I'm sure we're all experienced with the actual reality of creepers, you know, predators, just worming their way into your confidence. I mean, from a really young age, that was always my experience, was that you just had to be on guard. And especially, you know, back in the day when there weren't there wasn't that trend of helicopter parenting. So you did have that delicious freedom, but with the freedom came, you know, the creepy guys that would invite you in for a cup of warm milk and some cookies.
Come and see my puppies.
Yes, come and see my puppies. Or just some garden variety flashers.
But with us, it was always stranger danger, wasn't it? When actually the biggest danger is probably some guy you know or you think you know.
Yeah, well, I've had strange encounters with all varieties on the spectrum. But I came of age before the computer business. And so that is very insidious because, you know, that's in the home.
Yeah. And it's in a place where you feel safe and you feel pretty confident.
And also it's an adventure. I mean, it's so exciting to, you know, you're virtually being seduced as well. There's that idea of being groomed and seduced or flattered. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to like make it sexual necessarily, but there's, you know, someone's paying attention to you and flattering you and saying whatever. So
and just those two words to my little girl, hey honey, my God.
Yeah, no, that is total red light alert.
I feel sick just thinking about it. Hey Simon. Hi Simon.
Hi, you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm all right. What did you want to say?
I get what you're saying. Yeah. I get what you're saying. I don't have kids, but I know where you're coming from. It must be a huge worry. I don't know whether it's going to help you, but I'm not sure whether this works on a computer, on a laptop, but it definitely applies to iPads, phones, tablets, things like that. There's a browser that you can download. It's called Spin Browser.
Spin Browser?
Spin Browser, yeah.
Right. And what does that
do? So that browser is already programmed to block any gambling website, porn website, whatever. Plus, you can also program websites and bits and pieces into there if you don't want them to be accessed, so you get complete control over the content.
Yeah.
But on top of that as well, I also use an app called Norton App Locker or App Lock. And what that does is you can tell it which apps you will allow to be used without putting in a password.
Yeah.
And if anybody tries to access the apps and gets the password wrong, it actually takes a photograph of the offender.
Ooh.
So you've got proof there that, you know, somebody, little fingers, have tried to open certain apps that they're not supposed to because it's gotten banged to rights with a photograph.
Oh, wow, she would be so busted. Now, tell me to jog on if I'm asking too much, but how come you know about this?
Right, okay, well, the thing is, I'll follow on with my honesty that I was talking the other night.
Yeah.
I am a gambling addict.
Right.
And there have been times where I have had to search for ways of being able to use my technology, but without me being able to access gambling sites.
Mm-hmm.
And there is literally maybe one or two companies out there that offer an app, but they are extremely expensive. So I had to, I'm quite adept with phones and technology. So I had to devise my own way of locking myself out of those things.
Yeah.
And that's the way I did it, because basically what I had to do was download the relevant software I needed, tested it all out to make sure that I could not access anything that I wasn't supposed to, and then ask a friend to password protect that content.
Right.
So basically giving me full functionality of my phone and my it basically meant that if I wanted to access anything like that, I would either have to do a complete factory reset, which, considering my life is on my phone and I can't be bothered to go through setting it all up again, or go out and buy a new device.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so that's why, basically. You know, like I say, I'm a gambling addict, but it's not an issue for me. I enjoy doing it. It's just that there have been times where I've had to calm it down a little bit and restrict myself. So that's why. But like I say, it applies to any apps that you don't want them to access. You just password protect them and they can't get in there.
I get it. I completely get the... I've been the friend that's been told to lock someone out of their thing with something similar, so I get it. And they're really useful, those things, aren't they? Especially with gambling. It's so insidious.
I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I love my gambling. I really enjoy it. It's not a problem to me because I'm lucky in the respect that I can manage it.
Right.
You know, my bills always get paid, and I only really gamble just small amounts, maybe £10, £20, whatever. I'm certainly not one of these, and I've been like it for years and years and years, so it's not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm certainly not one of these that takes the week's rent to the bookies or whatever. You know, and I think that's very sad, but I also get the disease side of it, you know, that needs to be helped rather than mocked.
Yeah.
But luckily for myself, it's a manageable situation. It's just that from time to time, I'm aware that, you know, hang on a minute, I have been a little bit silly, maybe £10-20 more than I wanted to. I need to just block myself out for a little while.
Yeah, you catch yourself.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it works for me. I mean, I had a little win over the weekend, so I was quite pleased with that. Which kind of, you know, doesn't mean that I'm ahead, because I probably, you know, I probably gambled more than I've lost, but I do enjoy it. That's the thing. I enjoy it, and it's cheaper than a night out. And as we spoke about the other night, you know, I have social anxiety, so I'm not going to go to the pub. So, you know, that's how I justify it.
Right.
But like I say, there are times where I need to force myself to have control, and that's what I've learned. You know, there are these things out there that the only thing is, I'm assuming, obviously, because a laptop or a PC is a different operating system, there must be equivalents or PC versions of this. But I definitely recommend Spin Browser, because if there's a website there that you don't want anybody to access, you can actually go into the app, type the name or type the address of that website, and it will then lock that out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right.
Just thought that might help you.
Thanks very much, Simon. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Good
Thank you, ladies.
Me. Bye, bye. 0344 499 1000 if you have any other solid tips for me at this point. And also, you know, on dealing with what could be a situation that I that gets worse. You know, I'm really, the thing I'm worried about was the extreme reaction to me shutting that thing down. And I know we talked about the other day about how, you know, when kids are playing games, they get really engrossed and time flies and it is going to infuriate them if you shut it down all of a sudden. I get that, right? But this was nuts and I'm kind of worrying that it may have been something that's been going on for a while.
Yeah, it seems the fact, you know, just the velocity and the ferocity of her approach, her reaction indicates that she has a lot invested in it. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just like something that she'd stumbled upon that night.
Yeah. And she's not the kind of kid who needs convincing that there are creeps out there. She's really sensible. So, you know, it's the fibbing that makes me wonder whether the final story I was told is the only story.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do?
Well, Catherine, the thing is you're great at keeping the lines of communication open and letting her know that you can talk to her. I mean, you had that thing the other night where she bought 4 or 5 books on the trot.
Seven.
Oh, 7 books.
On my Kindle, yeah.
On your Kindle. And she, I mean, she knew, like tonight, she knew she was doing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like you came down on her like an anvil.
No.
I mean, she knows. She was already kind of halfway there beating herself up about it.
And I really tried hard not to embarrass her as well. Like, I know her granddad was there and obviously he could tell that something was going on. So that's why I took her upstairs to have a quiet talk about it. But flipping out, what a situation. And it just seems like since she turned 9... we're dealing with really quite grown-up stuff all of a sudden.
Yeah. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that adult life and adult pastimes are so much more accessible to kids nowadays because they can just go on their computer and have at it, have access to it.
And this is a kid who wants a phone. There is no way in hell this child will have a phone before she's 30 years old. 03444991000. Please, if you can help me out, I'd appreciate it.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
Oh my God, listen to this text message.
All right.
First thing with that computer game problem is to contact the game developers and alert them so that that character, so at least he gets banned. Secondly, inform the police. No question she was being groomed.
Oh gosh.
No matter how you explain it to children, they won't understand and will always assume they would never do anything stupid and that they know better than you. Absolutely horrific story. Good luck with it. And maybe also block the game's domain. Oh. So the quick word with Sally. Hi, Sally.
Hello, Kath. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Sally.
Hello. Yeah, we had this problem with my two. It was about a year and a half ago. And I discovered that my son had been talking to people and he'd actually sent pictures of himself.
Oh.
He's 15. We spoke to their schools and we were recommended to obviously, you know, improve our settings and things like that, but to also sit the children down. And they recommended a YouTuber called Kobe Persin, who makes YouTube videos. And what he does is he's sort of employed by parents who are worried that their children are looking at things and things like that. And he will interact with the children online and then test them on whether or not they will do things that they shouldn't, like go and meet him or things like that. And then there are, you know, sometimes these children will go and meet them at a park, and then all of a sudden the mother will come out and the father will come out, and it's
like a sting operation.
Yeah, exactly. And I sat the children down and watched it, and it really got through, especially to my son. My daughter's quite good at things like that. You know, she will tell us if, you know, anything happens or whatever. But it was my son. It really sort of got home to him of what could happen if he met people who, you know, my son's autistic too, so it's very difficult. If you tell him something, he takes it at face value.
Right.
So, you know, he was saying, oh, no, they're only 14, or, oh, they're 15, they're the same age as me. And we'd say, well, how do you know that? You know, you don't know that. So I'd recommend those YouTube videos. But the other thing that we've come across is teenagers online who are self-harming and sort of showing off about it or trying to get as many people to tweet them to not do it or to... And it's quite disturbing. And my daughter's had a lot of problems with that. You know, she'll come to me and show me pictures that young girls have sent of them self-harming and things like that. And she gets very worried and concerned. And, of course, we report it all. But that seems to be a new problem.
Oh my God.
That's happening. And I've spoken to my daughter, and recently we had to take her to the doctors because she was actually talking about self-harming and, you know, and things like that. So that's another worry that we've had recently that seems to have overtaken people pretending to be other people.
Oh. And Sally, how old's your daughter?
13.
Right.
So,
So I've got a few more years of this then.
Yeah, unfortunately. But she's also just come out to us.
Right.
And so she gets... She's also worried about that sort of thing, and she gets a lot of stick for that online, you know, because she's quite open about it. But yeah, the self-harming thing is my concern at the moment, because obviously she's started talking about doing it. Mm-hmm. How do you,
because this is the thing I'm really, really determined to do. I really want to keep the communication open. I don't want her hiding stuff from me, but I also have to lay the law down sometimes. And today, when she was begging me to let her go back on the computer, I said, do you know what? Sometimes I've just got to be mum and I can't be your friend. And this is one of those occasions where I'm sorry, my darling, but I'm trying to look after you and I'm doing my very best. And I know that this is not the right thing to do. So I'm willing to take this one and be the unpopular one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've taken the Xbox off of my son. We've taken his iPod, for a number of months. We've change passwords every day.
Yeah.
To different things. We've changed passwords on the Wi-Fi. If he wants to use Facebook or something, he has to sit with us and use it. At any moment I'll say to him, right, I'm going to check, I'm going to have a look, mm-hmm. Make sure. And then I will change the password of an evening, and you know, he won't be able to get back on it because we've had times when we've forgotten that he's got like a PSP and it's upstairs in his bedroom, and we've found, you know, because he's got so many sort of different things, you know, sometimes it's difficult to remember, oh, well, we got his DS and have we got this and have we got that. So sometimes we've sort of dropped the ball on that, and we've found, you know, him awake at 2 a.m. still on his PSP or his iPod.
Right.
So everything has to come down, and everything, we've changed everything. But luckily it's sort of got into his head now, so we, you know, that happens less and less. But I still, you know, any minute, like, can I check your iPod, or can I check this? Or I'll go and check his Xbox while he's at school and make sure that everything... And also his dad does that too. His dad knows all the passwords, and he does that. He lives in Leeds. So there's communication there, and he will do that at any moment too. So he knows he's got like 3 of us on his case.
Okay. So at least I'm not the only member of the fun police in this conversation.
No. But yeah, try Kobe Person. It really sort of put the willies up them. They were quite shocked at, you know, what happened in the videos. So
I'll have a look at it first, but it sounds like, it sounds like a shout. Thanks very much, Sally.
All right, thanks.
Cheers, then. Bye bye. Let's have a quick word with Louise. Lou, hiya, Lou.
Hiya.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. You just wanted to check in, didn't you?
Yeah, kind of, because I haven't given an update in quite a while, so I just thought I'd check in.
Just remind us of where you were.
The last time I rang in, God, I can't even remember. It's been that long ago.
It was ages ago.
It was. The last time I rang in, I can't remember what the reduction was, but I had went ahead and actually done quite a larger reduction than what was recommended.
This is, the history with Lou, you don't mind me explaining this, and jump in if I'm getting it wrong, because it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Lou, you got kind of hooked on painkillers, didn't you?
Yeah, prescription morphine.
Right. After, what was your injury?
Over the years, it was various injuries. And basically, my tolerance just for any kind of painkillers just didn't work because, you know, I'd been on morphine for so long. Mm-hmm. So for any kind of pain, I needed morphine, but it was back pain and coccyx pain.
Yeah.
That I think was the final straw. And then they stopped working and I started abusing them.
Yeah. So you caught yourself in that, and you've been trying to reduce with the help of your doctor?
Well, I went into rehab addiction, an addiction clinic in November. So I did because I reduced so much with, you know, the help of my doctor, but I got stuck, I hit a wall.
Yeah.
Couldn't go any further, and the addictions team agreed then to admit me and made massive progress in there. Then whenever I got out, you know, continue on then reducing at home with the help of the addictions team, my GP, mental health team involved as well, and had been doing really, really well. So the last time I had been talking to you is I was to reduce a small amount, and I went ahead and actually did far more than what I was supposed to do, and I was successful in that. That went well. And then the next time I went to see my key worker, we decided to hold off on any more reductions for a while because, you know, I was way ahead of what I was supposed to be, you know, on the time frame and all that stuff. Then a few things kind of happened that put me in really bad form. Like, I suffered depression on and off, but I've suffered depression since my mid-teens. And I don't even know if I want to go into it. But
you don't have to say anything you don't want to, Lou.
It's not even that I do want to. Do you know something? I will say it. Somebody that I was close to within NA, they were taking me to meetings and things like that. And all of a sudden, I started receiving these text messages basically telling me to stay away from this person. You know, his wife wouldn't be too happy if she found out, all this kind of stuff. And I had met his wife and his family and, you know, absolutely nothing in it whatsoever. And I thought, right, you know, somebody's obviously trying to stir a very big pot here.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to get in touch with him and I couldn't. And I thought, okay, the two of them, both him and his wife, need to see this. So I went up to the house. And to cut a very long story short, it turns out, by the looks of it, he has been seeing somebody on the side and has been using me as an alibi.
Right.
Aww.
Saying that he was taking me to meetings, but not taking me to meetings. I was apparently at meetings with him that I've never even been to.
Oh, man.
I was receiving hang-up phone calls, all this kind of stuff. Had to get the police involved.
Do you think it's the person he's been seeing that was doing that?
I think it was his wife.
Right.
I think she was assuming that it was me.
Right.
You know, it kind of goes without saying she would have, you know, assumed that it was me. Because
if your name's the one that's being bandied around, yeah.
Yeah. You know, he's saying that he's taking me to meetings, but I'm not, you know, I haven't been to any of these meetings with him.
Oh, Lou. So where does this leave you?
Medication-wise, tablet-wise, it left me no different. I didn't crave any extra. I didn't want any extra. But mentally, it left me devastated.
Yeah.
I couldn't get my head around how somebody could do that. I had absolutely no idea that any of this was going on. I couldn't understand how somebody could do that. And I also had it in my head as well that, you know, thank God I have a family around me, you know, I've got a bit of support. If that had been somebody else that was in the knife edge, it could have sent them backwards big time.
Yeah.
It could have been a totally different story.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry. But, you know, the fact that you've managed to keep on the straight and narrow despite all this is testament to you.
Well, that's the way I look at it. You know, this is, you know, with such a big reduction, you know, compared to what I have been on, I kind of put this as my first real world test.
Yeah.
That's the way I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
The fact that I didn't crave any extra, I didn't want any extra, to me, that's a win.
Of course it is.
But mentally, it did. You know, and there's a few other things that had happened in real life, I suppose, that, you know, just everything seems to happen at once, doesn't it?
Of course it does.
And I just completely retreated into myself. You know, I wasn't going out. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't even speaking to friends or family or anything like that.
No, but that's survival, isn't it? That's just, I can't feel any more of this. So I'm just going to tuck myself away for a bit.
Yeah. It's only recently that I've started coming back out of that. You know, I'm starting to socialise again and, you know, starting to come back around out of it. But that's me and that's my mood. It's the way I always have been and it's the way I always will be. But while this was going on, we had kind of decided, you know, I'm not in the right place to do any more reductions.
Yeah.
And the key worker had also said to me that I'm waiting on the pain clinic getting involved. I've had an appointment with them in January past, and they have said it can take up to 10 months to get your one-to-one appointment with the consultant. And they're worried about bringing me down any further because of the pain in my back. They're worried in case that flares up, and they want to have a pain management plan
mm-hmm.
in place.
How do you feel about that?
Frustrated. Because I now feel that I'm getting into the right frame of mind to be able to start doing reductions again. But they're saying that they're worried in case the pain flares up. But this was the whole point of me coming off them in the first place.
Right.
You know, because I was feeling that it wasn't doing anything for the pain at all.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can be really headstrong and, you know, any time I've done reductions, I've went ahead and done more than what I'm supposed to have done. But I'm too scared now to go ahead and do more without the medical care and without, you know, the permission to do it in case I do mess things up.
Yeah, I understand you that. Know, I understand that, especially after what you've been through. Yeah, I have come too far. And you're brilliant, Louise. I can't believe you've done this and managed to, like I say, to keep clean despite all the excuses you could have used otherwise. You know, it would have been completely understandable, but you've done it. And that's the thing, you've got to keep that time under your belt, haven't you? Just go one day at a time.
Oh, like, it used to control me.
Yeah.
You know, it used to rule me. You know, come hell or high water, Catherine, you know, it doesn't rule me anymore.
Good.
You know, at the minute, you know, I might have to live in the dose that I'm on for a while longer, but yeah. You know, there is no way that this has beaten me anymore.
Good for you.
You know,
you've got to keep an eye on it, but you've got the right attitude there by the sounds of things.
You know, and I know you see me in that YouTube chat and I'm a complete idiot and, you know, and all the rest of it, but, you know, that's just online.
Ah, you're a good one, Louise.
You can be anything you want online.
Yeah.
You know, but I've seen my key worker again on the 29th and I'm kind of hoping that I can get her to speak with the consultant, and if the consultant can get in touch with the pain clinic and get in touch with the consultant there, that can maybe speed things up a little bit.
Yeah, let's just see what happens.
You know, because I had kind of hoped that by now I actually would be completely clean.
Yeah, but you're still clean. That's a bonus, right?
Well, I'm still...
You're getting there.
I'm still having to rely on them.
What is it that Ian always says to me? It's progress, not perfection. Be kind to yourself.
Exactly. You know, it's one day at a time and all the rest of it. And the fact that, you know, I'm not going up, I'm maintaining.
Yeah.
you know, it's a maintenance dose at the minute.
Yeah, you're heading in the right direction. Listen, it's always good to hear from you. Will you give us a shout, you know, when you get to the next step? Because you are going to get there, I can tell.
Oh, I'm definitely going to get there. There's no doubt about that.
I'll speak to you then.
But listen, I've got a question before I go.
Go on then.
Any word about Belfast?
I don't think we've had it confirmed yet, but Belfast is definitely, I definitely want to go back there. I need to check, his lordship's back today, so I'll give him a nudge tomorrow when he's when he's a bit over his jet lag, but you know he's going to milk it for absolutely days, if not weeks, that he's knackered. So yeah, I'll have a word with him about it, Louise, but of course we'd love to see you there if we do come, and when we do come.
Oh, I didn't get to the London one. I was absolutely got it. I had the tickets and everything,
It was just a practice one for when you do turn up. Don't worry about it, Louise. You didn't miss much.
Oh no, I've seen the what do you call it, the stream footage, and Katie was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, thanks, Lou.
She's a ripper.
She is. I wish you had been there, Katie, to see you live.
Oh, me too. Well, especially after hearing you talk, your experience is totally inspiring.
It absolutely is. Listen, we're going to have to go, Louise, because I'm going to be in so much trouble. I'm like well late for the news, but I'm not sorry about it. It was good to talk to you.
Thank you. And listen, I hope you get things sorted with your wee one.
Cheers. Thanks very much, Lou. You take care of yourself. I'll speak to you soon.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle. You never know just where the conversation will take you. On Talk Radio.
Jerry, Steve, Alan, and if you were one of the other people who called, we're going to come back to calls in about, well, maybe 20, 25 minutes, depending on where this next conversation goes. But when Katie agreed to come and work with me here on the Late Night Alternative, she said to me, there's someone I really, really want to introduce you to through the miracle of radio. And it was our next guest, Lucy Cook.
Lucy Cook is a force of nature, literally. She's a zoologist, and she is dishing the dirt on the animal kingdom in her new book, which is called The Unexpected Truth About Animals, subtitled Stoned Sloths, Lovelorn Hippos, and Other Wild Tales. Lucy, are you there?
Oh, hang on a sec. Stoned Catherine. There we go. Here's Lucy. Hey, sorry about that. I was so enthralled with the description of your book that I completely forgot that it was my turn to press a button. Sorry, Lucy.
That's okay. Hello there.
Hi.
Meet you.
The last time, Lucy, that we spoke, you had enticed me to share a drink with you because you had some beaver sex glands that you wanted to share with me.
What the hell?
Is that not wrong?
That is absolutely true. We met in the St. Pancras cocktail bar and drank vodka and tonic. Talked about beaver anal glands.
Yes.
For about an hour. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Katie, it turns out, is quite an expert on these things because she actually quoted in my book. Because she revealed the she sort of taught me about how to appreciate the odors involved.
Yeah, so with my background in decoding scents and perfumes and the psychology of fragrance, that dovetailed neatly into what you're doing, which is you're kind of ripping the lid off of the anthropomorphizing of the animal kingdom, because humans have a way of attributing, quite incorrectly, human characteristics on animals. And you're here to tell us, no kids, animals are beasts.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's what my book's about. It's about how we've got animals wrong, from Aristotle to Disney, basically. And there's a whole load of reasons why we misinterpret animal behaviour. And one of the number one reasons is because our compulsive urge to anthropomorphise the animal kingdom. We must be a very insecure species that are constantly looking for our reflection in the animal kingdom and for permission to behave how we think we should behave or we want to behave. Or, you know, there's an awful lot of moralizing that happens about animals, which is completely ridiculous. And actually, I found fascinating was tracing some of that back, going all the way back to the medieval bestiaries, which are these first ever encyclopedias about animals that were written by medieval scribes. And they were religious scribes, so they tended to mix folklore with fact and a lot of moralizing. But some of those kind of moral opinions we have about animals, whether they're good or bad or whether that, you know, how tasteful we find their behaviour, that dates all the way back to then. We've been making the same mistakes, but sorry mistakes, for a very long time.
Are there any animals you can think of that have had a particularly bad and unfair rap over the years?
Well, the hyena's one of them. So hyenas are, I mean, you know, what would you think about hyenas? Tell me what you...
Oh, scrawny, opportunistic.
Predators. Yeah, they gang up on you. They rip you to shreds. They're opportunistic.
Yeah, they're like the ones in the playground who'll stand behind the bully and give you a kick as you walk out.
Exactly. So that's pretty good. So they're generally thought of as like the thugs of the animal kingdom, sort of like lurking in the back alleys, waiting to mug some honourable animal of its dinner money. You know, that's the sort of image they have. Or in The Lion King, they were incredibly stupid. That was the other thing, that they were sort of, you know, idiotic scavengers. And none of that is true at all. Hyenas, a spotted hyena, in fact, is this incredibly badass female-run society. Well, a matriarchal society. They are one of the most successful predators on the planet, not just by scavenging, but because they are incredibly intelligent, but more intelligent than lions. I am assured by Kay Holkamp, who studies them. And they rarely get this. They've had a bad rap all the way back.
And I want to know about the animals who have a good rap unfairly. So are penguins kind of fall into that department? Aren't they? Aren't they up to all sorts? Necrophilia was mentioned.
Oh God, really?
Yeah, exactly.
Gang rape.
Ironic. Hyenas were accused of homosexuality in the animal, in the bestiaries, because weirdly the female hyena has her lady parts. Let's just call it that. Look exactly the same as a male, so she has what's called in polite zoological circles a pseudo penis, and she has a fake scrotum as well. So,
oh, I think I have some of those. and if I don't, where can I get some?
The pseudo penis is actually an 8-inch clitoris.
So. Wow!
All right.
No wonder they're running the show.
That's exactly, they're running the show. So the hyena used to get accused of homosexuality and was this trickster. And now the penguin is the complete opposite. The penguin is an animal that is generally thought of as being incredibly cute, lovable, and these monogamous, and they're great parents. And thanks to March of the Penguins, which actually did such a good job of promoting this myth about penguins, this sort of idea that they're involved in some sort of epic love tree, that the American Christian right wing actually decided to hold up the penguin as a paragon of Christian family values. But the problem is you just shouldn't turn to penguins for moral guidance. You shouldn't turn to any animal for moral guidance.
That's not what they're for, is it?
You definitely shouldn't turn to a penguin, because you're going to be very disappointed. Because, yes, as Katie said, they are pathologically unpleasant necrophiliacs, basically. They live in a very brutal environment, the Antarctic. Those that live in the Antarctic, it's a very, very tough place to live. They're a very, very short window with which to procreate. And so the males will basically have sex with anything that moves.
Oh, God.
You know, or doesn't.
Don't move, like frozen penguins.
I've heard that saying before, if it moves, hump in. If it doesn't, hump it till it does.
But yes, so they're like gangs. The guy who first discovered the sort of the nefarious activities of penguins was this guy called George Murray Levick, who was part of Scott's Antarctic mission. And his diaries are a very amusing read, because he's just totally disillusioned. He starts off and he loves them. He's like, oh, they're like little children. They're so lovely. I love the penguins. And then after two or three days in their company, and he's seen their dark side.
Yeah.
He starts talking about how gangs of hooligan cocks, whose passion seems to run beyond their control, and there seems to be no crime too low for these penguins.
the thug penguins. But speaking of homosexual animals, now isn't that part of the repertoire of some apes, some chimps? Don't they?
Yeah.
Aren't there some lady lovers amongst the bonobo chimps, for instance?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's a huge amount of homosexuality in the animal kingdom, which again, I write about, it was sort of totally ignored by science for a long time because it didn't fit into neat Darwinian thinking, you know. So people just sort of ignored it. And hilariously, there's a brilliant... So they made it all sorts of... It was either ignored when it was observed in animals. There's a fantastic book called... I can't remember the name. Biological Exuberance, that's it, by a Canadian zoologist who compiled all of them, found 350 incidents of homosexuality in the animal kingdom. And one of which was a male orangutan, so yes, apes, who were performing fellatio in one another. And the scientist, the explanation that he gave for that fellatio is that he thought that it was nutritively motivated.
Oh, whatever he needs to get him through the night, for heaven's sake.
So, I mean, these sort of ridiculous excuses, and of course now is this a sort of new wave of thinking as more open-minded people take positions of power in science and re-examine old data and sort of go, well, actually, you know what, maybe it benefits child rearing, it might diffuse tension, or it might just be fun. You know, there are lots of reasons why there might be homosexuality in the animal kingdom. But what's important is that we shouldn't look to that to tell stories about ourselves. It just is what it is, and it exists there. But what we have a nasty habit of is trying to infer too much from animals about ourselves. This looking for our reflection thing just trips us up a lot, I think.
Well, the thing is, Lucy, I mean, humans, we're desperate for guidance, aren't we? I mean,
yeah.
We're always kind of floundering around and trying to understand, you know, like trying to get a clue or trying to get some guidance. And you can't help but look at animals and think, well, they seem happy. You know, maybe I should do what they're doing. But like, there's no one way, is there? I mean, there's certain breeds that mate for life, but then equally there's like black widow spiders who eat their mate, or praying mantises who eat their mate.
Exactly.
So I guess if there's there's an example for every bad example you want to embody.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. If you look for it, you can find it. That's for sure.
Now, how did you get into this whole animal bag? Because you came through kind of a little wiggly route, didn't you?
Yeah, that's a nice way of describing my career, actually, as a wiggly route. I did actually start out. I studied zoology at university. I was actually taught by. I have Richard Dawkins was my personal tutor at Oxford, which I can tell you was as terrifying as it sounds.
Wow,
he's a really, really scary man to have to write an essay for. I can tell you. So I was taught by him, and then my sort of buzzing zoological career was curtailed when I left university, and I had dreams of being a comic actress, or I don't know, being involved in comedy or entertainment. I started working in television comedy. I went to go and work for Jonathan Ross, gave me my first job in television.
Wow.
And then I worked with Vic and Bob, and I worked on their shows, I worked on a Far Show, and then I moved into doing sort of entertainment stuff, and then I became a documentary director for years. But in my heart, I always loved animals. I always knew that I wanted to tell stories about animals. I knew I'd come back to it, really.
And you followed a frog, didn't you? You followed frogs and toads back to your heart's desire.
Yeah, I had what can only be described as an unconventional midlife crisis. I was about to turn 40, and I was really just like dumbfounded by it, and just thinking, everybody's talking about how they were going to do their 40th ending. I'm just thinking, oh my god, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bugger off around South America by myself for 6 months looking for frogs, because that's all I really want to do. I quit my job, which was at the start of a recession, and I remember my father thought that I was completely insane. But I was like, I'm just so unhappy, I just need to go and find the frogs and find out why they're dying.
God, we need to talk about Lucy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, you're glad you did it. You've not looked back since.
Oh, no. I loved it. I'm thrilled I did it. I started writing a blog. I called myself the Amphibian Avenger, and I wrote this blog. It was a funny blog about my adventures, and, you know, and I raised a lot of awareness about amphibians, and weirdly, my blog was read by National Geographic, and they offered me my own TV series, which was all very peculiar and unexpected.
Wow.
Brian. So then that's how I then sort of migrated to the other side of the dark side of the camera, the front side. So that's how I ended up doing that. And then now I'm, you know, telling stories about animals and doing what I want to do. You know, yeah, that's the secret, really, is if you want to do something, you just have to just do it, you know.
Yeah, so, you have to follow a frog. You have to kiss a frog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. As long as it's not poisonous, that's a good idea.
And have you ever gotten into a sticky wicket with a critter that, you know, you got too handsy with and, you know, you did get poisoned or stung or bitten?
I did have a really, really, really near miss with a frog, actually, because there's this banana yellow frog in Colombia called Filobatus terribilis, the golden poison dart frog, and it's the most toxic animal on the planet. And one microdot of its poison will kill you in 3 minutes flat, and there's no antidote. It's the fastest acting neurotoxin that we know of. And so this frog sweats out the poison as a defense, you know, to stop it from being eaten. So I went to Colombia. I love frogs. I went to Colombia to find this very rare and precious frog, and there he was, hopping around on the forest floor in broad daylight, like, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough, of course, because nothing is going to dare eat it or touch it. But he's like, literally, it's just so weird seeing a frog, bright yellows, like hopping around with impunity. Do you know what I mean? Just
yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah, you think about it. Yeah, what are you going to do? Anyway, we did pick it up, but I had gloves on, obviously, to protect my hands, because just a microdot getting into my bloodstream or through my skin would, you know, I'd be dead. And I was holding the frog, and it was a bit like holding a loaded gun, and it kept hopping out of my hand, and my producer kept, who ironically had a phobia of frogs anyway, was kept screaming and running out of the way. But anyway, as I was holding this frog, obviously he's sweating a lot of the poison out because he's feeling quite stressed, and I just became overwhelmed by how beautiful he was and how extraordinary evolution is, and this happens to me sometimes, I burst into tears, because I was in so much awe and wonder at this creature, and I went to go and wipe the tears away with my glove, and Cole Cruz went, stop! And I got like 2 inches away from having death by frog love. Do you know what I mean? As the obit. So you could just imagine Schadenfreude in the papers. Do you know what I mean? The easy, she kissed her prince and then he killed her.
Oh, God. I mean,
the letter is so bad.
It would have been one of those things of like, at least she died doing what she loved.
Exactly. But I had a heebie-jeebies for a whole week. I'd wake up just like, oh my God, I can't believe I nearly did that. It was really hardcore. So yeah, it does happen occasionally. You have to. The thing about animals and wild animals is I think really amazing is that you just have to be really present. You know, it is one of those things that I always sort of talk about mindfulness and how good it is for you, you know, but to sort of, you have to be very present because you have to focus on what's going on because you need to be alert and you need to pay attention. You know, you need to be an animal, actually.
Well, yeah.
You need to be, you know, an animal.
You have to have respect as well, because what do you think about, for instance, that dude who fancied himself a bit of a Dr. Doolittle, and he went off and lived with grizzlies, Grizzly Man. There was a film made about him. And obviously he was deluded, and now he's dead because the grizzlies decided that he wasn't one of them. But what do you think about that kind of behavior?
Well, that was a classic sort of, you know, I mean, it's a brilliant film, Werner Herzog's Grizzly Bear Man. And, you know, Timothy Treadwell was a very troubled character, and he's a very lost person, as you pointed out, you know, looking for guidance. And so he sort of related to and found these sort of kinship with these bears. But of course, that's a type of sort of anthropomorphism. He was projecting things onto these animals that just weren't there, emotions and kinship and all these things that the bears just didn't feel for him. You know, bears, there are animals that are sophisticated enough to have emotional bonds with you. But a bear is not one of them. It was not surprising really that he ended up.
Being well, I watched that film, and like you say, he was a very sort of troubled person. I did think there was a tiny hint of death wish in that as well.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, he was an extraordinary character, definitely. Mm. Not to be recommended. I wouldn't recommend going and living with bears. I had a I was on a hiking event. It's a giant sequoia national park recently, and I got very lost, and it started getting really dark, and then I started seeing bears everywhere. It was just really, thinking about Timothy Treadwell the whole time.
and the Revenant.
Exactly. That's really graphic.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you survived frogs and bears.
Mm.
Just watch yourself. Steve Irwin keeps popping into my head.
Yeah, I know. Well, those guys that go around sort of prodding animals, they're asking for trouble, really, I think. You know, I think, you know, keep a bit of a distance. Try and, don't aggravate them for the sake of television. I find that sort of thing very irritating, actually, those sort of TV shows. Very annoying.
And, Lucy, why did you have those dried anal glands, beaver anal glands, that you were waving under my nose all those months ago? What was going on? Were you trying to seduce me?
You just tend to have them in your pocket at all times. What's going on there?
But basically, that's one of the myths from the bestiaries, those old medieval encyclopedias, the animal encyclopedias. The myth was that what they wrote about beavers is they said they didn't mention their beavers' architectural skills or tree-cutting ability. Every single bestiary said this about beavers. They said, there is a very gentle animal called the beaver whose testicles are very good for medicine. And when they're chased by the hunter, they will cut off their testicles with their teeth and throw them at the hunter and thus escape.
So they'll
throw their balls at you.
They throw their balls at you, yeah. So this... it's not true, so that was all linked up. Basically, beavers. It wasn't actually their testicles, but it was actually their anal glands, which look quite a lot. They have a sort of a look of the testicle about them, don't they, Katie? I think you'll agree there was a sort of certain wizened charm.
A certain handy, very snack sized, portion control element to them.
Yeah, so basically they, because beavers' gonads are internal, so they don't hang about outside the body. So that's where the sort of myth had come from, is that people have, you know, mistakenly seen beavers, but they didn't have their balls. They sort of, you know, they made up this idea that they cut them and thrown them, you know, that. Then it was also, that was a morality tale, basically, about if you cut off your vices and throw them to the devil, then you'll live a life of peace. That was the sort of message of it all. So that's why the reason why these anal glands, they weren't testicles, they're anal glands, they have this liquid in them called castoreum.
Yes.
Which was used to, in medieval times, to cure women of hysteria.
Oh.
Because, of course, every woman, all she really needs is a pair of phony gonads. That's what she, male gonads. That's what's wrong with all of us deep down. You know what I mean? That's what we need. So just to calm us down. Calm down, dear. Here's a pair of beaver balls and everything will just seem so much better.
Well, I have to say that I did feel quite relaxed as we were drinking our vodka and tonics and snorting those castoreum glands, those shriveled pods of mellowness. They did. And I have to say, they do have a nice earthy smell that is sort of reminiscent of olives. It's kind of like a barnyardy smell. So it's not
salty.
It's not fecal. It's not like out and out poo, but it is sort of so comfortingly animalistic.
Mm.
Yeah, that's it. They don't, for considering where they're located, so close to the animal's refuse chute, they smell nothing like the refuse itself. You know, because their contents are botanical in nature. So basically, beavers are vegetarians, and plants don't want to be eaten any more than, you know, antelope do or whatever, but they can't run, so they produce lots of toxins in their leaves that make them very hard to digest. And what the beaver does is it sequesters those toxins and then excretes them into these glands and then uses them to mark their territory, because they've got a very aromatic nature. So as Katie says, you know, when I ordered my beaver anal gland off eBay, which I did do, by the way, I was really surprised when they arrived. The entire packaging that they arrived in felt like a hippie shop.
Well, I do appreciate that your use of the word packaging for the anal glands.
Wow, you can really get anything off eBay these days. What is it they say, fill your cart with colour? I don't know what colour that was.
It's the world's marketplace.
Oh, Lucy, this sounds great. I'm going to get a copy of this book. The Unexpected Truth About Animals. You've been an absolute delight. Katie was not wrong when she said you were fantastic.
Oh, so nice to speak to you again, Katie.
Yeah.
Drink over anal glands again soon, please.
Oh, please. Slot me right in for one of those.
Good to speak to you, Lucy. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, you too.
See you soon.
Bye-bye. That's Lucy Cook. 0344-499-1000. We're back to the phones in just a second after this.
Experience the unconventional, the unpredictable, and the completely unorthodox. The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
It's the last night with me and Katie because you know who is back. He's probably back in the country right now. So he'll be tuning in. If you could all be fantastic from here on out. I mean, not that you haven't been up to this point, but if you wouldn't mind just pushing an extra couple of great calls out, I wouldn't mind. 0344-499-1000. So a quick word with Nick. Hiya, Nick. Oh, you. Oh, it's you.
Hi. I just wanted to... There's two quick things. One... I saw a documentary once some years ago about two gay swans.
Do
you remember that one?
I do remember that one.
It was incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. It was amazing. And the second point, I've really enjoyed your shows this week. But one question, and if Ian's listening, he can give me an answer. Is he still friends with Daisy Donovan? Because although I've loved Katie being on there this week... Yeah, I sort of did wonder why maybe he didn't ask Daisy. I'm not saying Daisy would have been any better, but...
Right. I love how you're just sort of hedging your bets. And
I can tell you exactly. I can answer the question for you.
Okay.
Ian didn't choose his replacement.
Okay.
I was asked if I wanted a co-host, and I said, I know exactly who I want, and that's why Katie's here. I also know that they haven't spoken, he and Daisy haven't spoken for years. It's like you saying, well, who did you work with 20 years ago? Do you still talk to them? I don't think there's anything bad between them. It's just they don't really keep in touch.
Oh, I just remember they were great on the 11 o'clock show.
Yeah.
So, as replacement, Katie's excellent.
She's great.
But Daisy popped into my mind, and I thought, I just wondered if they were still, you know, friends. So, okay.
That's all good. Thanks for giving us a ring, Nick.
All right, take care.
Bye. Poor Nick. Hi, Anne. Oh, we've caught Anne doing something.
Hi.
What are you doing? I can hear jangling and clattering.
I'm beeping.
You're beeping?
First time caller.
Good. Thanks for ringing.
Well, I thought you girls deserved to get a phone call. You've done such a great job.
Yay!
While you've been away. Really great. And I've been listening since Ian done the jungle, really. But I never had the guts to phone, so I thought, no, you two girls are lovely, so I'm going to give you a call.
Yay!
We're the softer side, are we?
We're the good cops.
We are, actually.
Less scary, maybe.
Maybe a bit. Anyway.
You've been doing a great job.
Thank you.
Katie, you've been really great, and it's been brilliant to watch you on YouTube and listen every night.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
That's really sweet of you to say. What have you been up to today, Anne?
Well, not a lot. Out in the garden, doing some gardening work and busying myself around the house. I was phoning really because you had brought up about being aware of what your child's doing online and, you know, keeping an eye on things. My son is now at high school and they had an awesome event for parents and for the kids, and it was in conjunction with the NSPCC. And they gave us guides to being aware of what the kids are doing online and what to do and where to go to look for help. And they've even got a free phone number to call for some help as well if you want to. You're always giving out free phone numbers to people, Kath, that are in need of help.
I am, actually, yeah.
So I thought, I've got one for you.
Oh, thank you. Go on, fire away. Let me take that.
Okay, so it's the NSPCC and it's 0808-800-5002.
Yeah.
And they do booklets that are absolutely brilliant. My son is online a lot, and it was a worry of mine. But in conjunction with the high school, we got some absolutely brilliant advice and things to look out for and things that would shock you that the kids actually get up to that the high school has to deal with on a daily basis.
What, like what?
Dick pics.
Oh, God, I know.
I know. And, the you know, things like that getting sent around the school and they were saying to the kids, you know, it's not only if you do this, but if you share it, it's actually illegal to pass it on around about your friends. And
yeah, because technically, even though it's a kid sending it to a kid, they're disseminating child abuse images.
Well, yeah, and child pornography. Exactly. And so to a minor.
Yeah, God.
Even if they're all minors.
So they get cops involved and stuff to just scare the bejesus out of them and hopefully stop them from passing these things on, because it can ruin kids' lives.
Yeah.
Because once it's online, that's it online.
Yeah, yeah, it's a real worry. I'm taking it as a rude awakening today, and I'm thinking this is worth happening now. At least it wasn't anything too serious, and maybe there's something I can do that will
absolutely
will prevent it going any further.
And Kathy, you're doing your very best, you know, and you're open with her and you're honest with her, and I've always been like that with my son, and just warned him of who's out there. You don't know who you're dealing with online.
Yeah.
I've got all these passwords and stuff like that, and everything's very open around here because he knows that it's just because I care for him and I love him and I'm protecting him from, you know, people who can be dicks.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't like it, though.
No, they won't like it. But, you know, you're not the friend, you're the parent.
I know. I found myself trotting that old gem out today, and I remember my mum saying it to me that you've got loads of friends, but you only get one mum, and I completely get it. And I also said to her, "You'll understand this one day." And I thought, God, what have I become?
I know. The stuff that they said to you as well, but it's true. Yeah. And, you know, we love them and we care for them, and we've got to protect them. And it's just such a scary new world out there online.
It is, and this is a kid who wants a phone at 9 and saying all her friends have got them. And I've said, look, that's never an argument for doing anything, right? And actually makes me more determined. You won't. Ah, no, no, she's not ready for a phone. That's obvious.
Yeah, well, that's up to you, isn't it? You're the guy that'll be paying the bills, so it's up to you when she gets it and what she uses it for, and you'll have the passwords for it, I'm sure, when she does get it. So.
Oh, God, yeah, she might as well not have one for the amount of restrictions I'll put on it. But
this guide gives you all the details on how you can go about setting up the stuff online to protect them from stuff as well. You know, all the, what was it you called? I can't remember what you call it. They're to guard against them going where they shouldn't be going.
Oh, yeah, like a restrictor. Well, what
do you call it? Yeah.
I'm being led down the same dark alley. Yeah, I know. Like online safety type thing. Yeah, that's what I want. Some sort of software that's going to restrict their access to and people's access to them. That's the most terrifying thing. My God.
Absolutely. You just don't know who's out there. Parental controls. That's it.
That's it. Boom. Thanks very much, Anne.
Okay, thanks, Kath.
That's
such
good advice. Thanks very much. I really appreciate it. That number again, 0808 800 5002. I'm going to be ringing that tomorrow, if only just to get a little bit of guidance. Maybe they can send me a leaflet or something.
A leaflet.
I don't know. I'm that kind of geek.
A pamphlet.
Whenever stuff happens to me, I always think, is there a book I can read to get me out of this situation?
Yeah.
And I know that books aren't always going to help, but it might just give me a bit of guidance. I don't know. Oh, that number again, 0808 800 5002. But don't ring that one tonight unless you want some online safety helpline. What you want to ring tonight is 0344 499 1000, especially because I know that you know who will be tuning in any minute and we need to sound busy. Let's have a quick word with Jerry. Hiya, Jerry.
Thanks, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you coping with this heat?
I'm sweating. I'd like to sing a song.
You want to sing me a song?
Katie is a different show.
Okay. You want to hear that? Because we were talking about more easily understandable it can be when Jerry sings to us.
I can't wait.
She's taking the time to sing the call. I'm going to have a chat with Jerry. This second set up. Okay. Is that okay?
Yep. Here we go.
Katie?
Yes.
Did you meet the Beastie Boys?
Yeah, I have. I did.
What do you think of them? My favourite band.
What's your favourite band?
What did you think of them?
Well, they were pretty sassy. One of them was a little surly, but the other two were kind of amenable enough. They were sort of like trying to straddle the line between being cool and being nice boys from New York City, which is what they really were.
Okay,
Yeah, I'll give you a ring back in 5 minutes. He's having some technical difficulties. That's all right. Don't worry about it, Jerry. We'll give you a buzz back.
Good, Katie.
Okay. Hiya, Tom.
Hey, hi. Are you okay?
Yeah, fine. Thanks.
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Hi, Katie.
Hi.
I'm really good. Thank you.
Go on. What did you want to say, Tom?
When you said what's up, to be honest, I haven't got anything to say, really.
Oh.
Just wanted to join in with the general Bon Jovi. Yeah, you understand French?
Yeah.
May we?
I tell you, actually, I've got something to say. It might be a little bit controversial.
Go on.
When I first heard you with Ian on Three Counties, I thought you're a very good broadcaster, and I'm really pleased you've progressed. And there are very few female broadcasters that I actually like. It's controversial to say that, I know.
It's not that controversial. There are a lot of people who feel like that. But
yeah.
What is it about the others that you don't like?
I'm very choosy. I like people to be fast, funny and clever. Mm. And also, there's certain subjects that women do enjoy by talking about.
What, like periods and bras and that?
Yeah, toilets and children. Basically, toilets, children, and hospitals.
Toilets.
Wait,
I want to get my. I have to get my hospital and my toilet game and my children game together because I don't talk about any of those.
Oh, I almost told you about a toilet game. I thought it'd be too. Oh no, I thought it'd be too awful.
Wait, but toilets, is that a lady thing? I thought for sure that was a boy thing.
Men don't go to the toilet.
No, but they talk about toilety things. Like boys like to smoke on the toilet.
Yeah, they do like to smoke on the toilet. The particular boy I was hanging out with at that time, yeah, I did. But, okay, well, I've managed to keep the toilet chat. I mean, I've managed to suppress my natural instincts to go toilet.
And you didn't talk about hospitals, yeah. But you were talking a lot about your kids.
Yeah. It was more about perverts I was talking, really. It was right. More about perverts online who were preying on my adorable daughter.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about this evening. Oh, I haven't really been listening, to be honest, sorry.
You're an outrage.
Just generally. I used to be a taxi driver, and you could press a buzzer when women first mentioned something scatological, and it would be within a minute. Talking amongst themselves, but I guarantee.
But isn't that because you were giving them a lift home from a night out, and they probably did need a wee?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Because unlike men, we can't just duck. Well, actually, we do, but we can't duck as easily off into bushes and alleyways to relieve ourselves on nights out.
Yeah, it is very difficult for women. I've travelled with a few. Women, and it's constantly on their mind where they're going to find a toilet within the next hour. Guys just find a bush or a
yeah, corner. Exactly. We got to plan these things. Or maybe we should reclaim the bushes.
Or maybe we could get some kind of device, like a catheter.
A catheter, I wouldn't advise it.
Although,
didn't that that killer astronaut lady shove a catheter up her knickknack so that she could drive across country to go try and kill her lover's girlfriend? Do you remember that story?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Yeah, so this was in Florida, and she was an astronaut, and she was in the middle of a love triangle. But the point was, she didn't have time on her killing mission to pull over and wee. So she just, I don't know if she had a catheter or if she just kind of put on a diaper. Oh, she wore a diaper.
Okay.
That was it. She wore an adult
diaper.
Because
the catheter would be weird.
Yeah, no, she did the diaper, so she was just like letting it rip. Wow. As she drove cross country with a rope and a hammer and a machete in
I was going to say, that wasn't the weirdest thing she did that day.
It wasn't the weirdest thing.
So what made you stop taxiing?
Oh, blimey. It wasn't that busy when I was there. I did it for about 3 or 4 years, and there was quite a lot of drivers moving in, so I found something else to do.
What do you do instead, if I may ask?
You can ask. I just work in a restaurant. That's all, really.
Take the just out. You work in a restaurant. What kind of restaurant?
It's just a everyman middle-of-town restaurant.
Oh.
I'm an octopus, basically. I replenish the stock, I cook, I answer the phone, I do whatever. It's like a home. It's like one of those jobs that's like being at school. Everyone's like fun. So I've kind of got stuck there.
Uh-huh.
Probably like your job. You think, I mean, it's a really, really good job, obviously. Nice people to be around, you know.
Sometimes.
Yeah, and then the years roll by.
So. Yeah. With my job, it's weird because it looks like I've been doing the same thing for years and years, but actually it's been different every 3 years or so. Like, I started out as a reporter. Then I was a newsreader. Then I got landed with a I had my own show. I used to have a gardening show. That was the first job I ever had.
I didn't know any of this about it. So you read the news?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I trained as a journalist and then started working for a commercial radio station, and then moved into the BBC thinking that would be like the gravy train, all aboard, and I would end up at the top within 5 years. But what happens is, on like BBC local stations, you get loads of opportunities, but you get moved around a lot as well. So, I started out in being a newsreader and then got my own shows. And then stuff happened. I didn't get kicked off or anything. For various reasons, I ended up doing more production. And yeah, it just keeps going round and round. But every time I get back to a job that ostensibly I've done before, I'm a different person. It's a really odd
thing. Well, you reinvent yourself. Or yeah. You discover different skills that you have.
When I had my gardening show, I didn't have a garden.
Fake news.
No, so what I did was I got in these really hilarious characters who happened to be gardeners, and we just used to mess around, you know, and that's kind of been my MO since then.
Yeah, fake it till you make it.
Exactly. If we're going to be here, let's have a laugh with it, you know. So, yeah, my gardening show was fun. Still, I didn't have a garden by the end.
If Ian is listening,
yeah.
When you moved from the BBC, you presumably spoke to someone and said, look, I can come back, right? This doesn't work out in a year's time.
I don't want to go back.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you. It's the biggest employer in media.
Yeah, but I wouldn't go back to that particular station. And actually, all the BBC stations kind of operate as individuals. So it's not like I'm turning my back on the BBC. It's just I don't want to go work at that particular station again.
If they headhunted you now and said, Radio 2, 10 until 1, Saturday, Sunday, you'd go, right?
Well, of course. I'd have a long, hard think with myself about it.
Yeah, all of 5 seconds.
Ian is awesome. I mean, he's a genius.
Yep.
And, you know, but, you know, money's money, mate.
Of course it is. Got mouths to feed.
Yeah.
And they're getting bigger.
Mm.
Hey, listen, Tom, I could talk to you all night, and I'm glad you rang up with nothing to say, because we've had loads to chat about.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. And you are one of those female broadcasters that I genuinely respect and like.
Oh, thanks, Tom.
I'm not just saying that, that's true.
All right.
Okay, all right, take care.
Oh, bye.
Bye. 03444991000. I said that in a very butch way, didn't I? Bye.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle. Speech Radio with a difference. Talk Radio.
Right, we're not playing games tonight. We've got to go back to Jerry because he's got a performance to deliver. All right. Jerry, are you braced? All right.
London calling to faraway towns, no war is declared, and battle goes on. London calling to the rebels, curtain covered, your brothers and girls. London calling, the daily trust, for the winner has been the dust. London calling, Jerry on the swing, set to the ring, as Trenton thing. The ice age is coming, sun's in, modern ice patches, to which it's grunting, raging, suffering, I have no fear, calling it down and die, live by the river.
Hooray! Punk rock! London calling.
Oh, he's gone.
He's gone.
He's become so overcome with himself that he's disappeared.
Wow, so that was a real punk rock rendition.
It totally was. I could feel it. I could feel the vigour from every pore.
Yeah, but he was almost giving, he was doing the Clash, but kind of a Beastie Boys shouty delivery.
Well, at first I thought, isn't this a Clash? I thought he was going to do Beastie Boys. I was slightly concerned, but then there was some sort of fusion going on, wasn't there?
It was a fusion.
Yeah. There was a line in that saying that the Ice Age is coming, and it kind of reminded me of something we were talking about earlier on. You said the sort of attraction of believing that we're somehow end of days.
Okay, so in addition to cannibals and being jealous of serial killers' much more active love life than mine, another source of endless fascination for me is the end of days, the apocalypse, Armageddon. Just because it's such a feature of stage and screen. It's a literary device. And I wonder why it is. And it's occurred to me that there's just something really comforting about the fact that, you know, when life just gets on top of you, you don't really have to sweat it. You don't have to just think this is never going to end, because probably it is going to end. Now, we can't necessarily decide when it's going to end unless you're like a dictator with a finger on the nuclear button. But there is something comforting. Like, I have a friend back in Los Angeles who was raised Jehovah's Witness. And in that religion, they're all about the end days. And
this isn't real life, really, is it? They're waiting for
the rapture.
Real life to begin once it's all over.
Yeah. And there's definitely going to be some wheat being sorted from the chaff. One of the little side effects of thinking this isn't the real world and, you know, bejesus is going to take us into the bosom of his multicolored dream coat or whatever they believe. One of the untoward, unexpected side effects is that they run up, apparently Jehovah's Witnesses run up huge credit card debt because they just figure, well, we're not going to be here next year.
Really?
Because it is prophesized that, you know, October 15th, you know, 2019 or whatever is the next end of the world.
Man, that might explain Michael Jackson's spendiness.
Oh, yeah.
He was Jehovah's Witness, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I don't know how lapsed he was by the end, but.
Yeah. And so that cracked me up was when I heard that. I just thought, I am in the wrong religion because I spend like a stripper. but my friend Sylvie, who grew up Jehovah's Witness, she isn't herself, but her parents still are. She says this is what I really love. They have a total get out clause about, you know, because they're always stacking up the next end of the world. They're always predicting like it's going to be in 4 months or next year, whatever. Stock up your provisions and, you know, get those air mile points racked up on your card. But then the day comes and goes, no end of the world. Everybody's still here the next day. So I say to my friend Sylvie, well, what do your parents say then when you're like, it's another lovely sunny day and we're still alive? And she said, no, they just shrug it off. They shake it off. No one's mortified about it.
What do they think? It's like a test or something? Or
I don't know. That's probably, you're a mom. You're good at wiggling out of
good at making stuff up.
Making some blarney up. And so, yeah, but no, just the overall idea of the apocalypse.
Oh, there's something very enticing in thinking that this is all temporary, nothing matters. And
yeah, and also like the exciting different ways that we can go because, I mean, it's one of the telling things about the stories that we tell ourselves about how the world is going to end is that it always reflects what our big anxieties are. So if you look back in Bible days, it's always going to be something about, you know, the next tribe is going to take over, you know, the next tribe down the dusty highway is going to take over our tribe. And that's terrible. But then, you know, during the Cold War and even now it's nuclear warfare. But then there was like that period in the 70s where there was a lot of like ecological awareness all of a sudden. So it was that idea of like we saw it reflected in those great B movies like Night of the Lepus, when giant rabbits are going to come and bunny stomp on our head, or giant frogs are going to eat us.
That would be a way to go. Listen, we've got to take some news. More of this blarney and your blarney coming up in the next sort of 5 minutes or so. If you want to give us a ring, 0344 499 1000. Love to hear from you.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
Well, so far no rapture, so we best press on for another 55 minutes.
I know that, you know, there's always the hope that we can all be put out of our misery by some sort of impertinent rapture situation.
I'm not going to get taken up anyway. I'm definitely one of the
earth
dwellers.
You're going to be left behind.
We're left below.
Left behind. Oh, gosh.
I've seen bumper stickers in America that said, in case of rapture, the car's yours. Like, they're so convinced that they're going to disappear, taken up in the golden light, and they're not going to need that utility vehicle or whatever they're called. You know, they're always massive kind of van things. Yeah, you can keep the car.
You can keep the sex pest van. I mean, There's so many variations on the theme, though, because there's the people who think, yeah, you know, we're going to go up and get our reward in heaven. But then there's the people who are the preppers. So they think there's going to be an apocalypse or there's going to be some sort of nuclear disaster or natural disaster. And the preppers are the ones who, yes, they are Christian, mm-hmm. but they love their guns.
Oh, my God. Right. And if you come and try and take any of their tinned goods that they've been storing up for the last 5 years, you're going to deal with Mr. Bullet.
You're going to deal with a big bayonet in your jacksie, much like Mussolini.
We spoke to a doomsday prepper in this country.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's happening here too. It's not just...
it's not just America in the heartland. In God's country!
No, it's not. Yeah. He did say to us that if we went for his food sources, then he would kill us.
And what kind of food did he have that we might be so tempted to...
It's all sealed, man. It's all sealed. So if there's any kind of nuclear activity going on, it's all going to be inside those tins.
Let me just tell you something. When the bomb goes off, I am running towards that mushroom
Absolutely.
Cloud.
Absolutely. I wouldn't want to survive, would you?
You don't want to... I don't really relish the idea of, like, a strip steak hanging off of my head in stripes. I don't want my flesh just to be like sliming off my body.
I mean, on the off chance though I do survive, you're going to be on your own against loads of rampaging blokes, zombies, people getting increasingly desperate. I will eat something that's going to make me really ill and I'll die a really slow, painful death. No, thank you. I'd rather just go up with the first lot.
Yeah, you just want to you don't want to be messing around with and also death by radiation poisoning. How unpleasant would that be? I mean, that's not going to be a comfortable slip off into a dirt nap.
No, as soon as I hear that alarm going, I'm just going to duck and cover. And we all know what's going to happen if you just duck and cover.
Yeah.
That coat is not going to protect you.
No, you're going to microwave. You're going to turn into a nuclear shadow on the ground. It's not going to be very pretty. But there's something so seductive about disasterbation, as my friend, the journalist Stephen Daly, very cleverly calls it. I mean, it's just the kind of fantasizing about how bad it can be. Like, there's all those movies from the 80s. Do you remember Threads?
Right. I've not seen Threads, but I have a copy of it sealed next to my DVD player. And every time I think about watching it and mention it to someone, they say, no, keep it in its wrapper.
It's just
there's a whole generation that have been tarnished by that experience.
Traumatized. I mean, and America had one called The Day After. I think ours came out in 84 and yours came out in 85. And it was all the same general plot of, you know, the Russians are up to Ruski business and they're angry and they're pushing the boat out. And then the Americans are like trying to save the world against the bad Russians. But then those crazy Iranians are getting out of control. And then pretty soon, you know, everyone's all angry at everybody else.
Oh, no.
And then there's a big bomb.
Threads and Ouija boards, two things that I know won't kill me, but I just don't fancy.
Ouija boards. Oh, my gosh. I was banned by my very religious dad from playing this because apparently you could conjure Satan.
Of course you can. That's a real thing. And Waddingtons make the boards. Did you know that?
Did they have a hotline to Satan? Did they get Satan to sign off?
I don't know. Waddington's upside down and backwards probably spells Beelzebub. I don't know. But, you know, the fact is a toy company is making this thing. And yet people will say, you shouldn't dabble with the occult.
Shouldn't dabble with the occult.
Unless you read all the instructions first and you pass in a clockwise direction.
I don't know. I love the idea, though, that you can summon Lucifer just by having a late night with snacks.
Like, I know. I've been on a haunted house vigil, right? Well, a haunted house vigil.
What do you mean by that with scare quotes that you're doing?
With people who said that somewhere was haunted, I went and stood in a darkened room. And although I knew it was bullshine, and although I do not believe in ghosts one bit, I didn't like the idea of calling out a name that might get some sort of response.
What, Ian Lee?
Well, no, he was there too, but he was downstairs. Okay. I'm reliably informed. No, but they were sort of saying, oh, this is the spirit of such and such. Call it out in that room. And I was thinking, I don't believe in it, but I still don't fancy saying it out loud.
Yeah, well, not when they have you all creeped out about it.
No, it was ridiculous behaviour. Hello, Keith.
Hello. I've just called up, really, to blow some smoke.
Oh.
And just to say how wonderful you two have been this week.
Oh, thank you.
Shucks, Keith.
Yay.
You know how to get around a girl.
And thank you for introducing me to Katie. It's nice to have someone new on the Twitter page, of course.
Ah, so nice. Thank you.
First time caller, long time listener. So I just really want to say thank you very much, and I hope we get to see you guys again next time Ian's away.
Ah, thanks, Keith.
Yeah, me too.
Might be your first call, but you just ticked all the boxes, so well done.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, bye. Here's Stuart. Hi, Stuart.
Hello, ladies. How are you today?
We're all right. Now, you seem to be calling me from North America.
That's giving the game away, isn't it? Well, I wasn't going to sing you a song or tell you a joke, but what I was hoping to do was maybe give you two ladies a radio first on your last night tonight.
God, what kind of first?
Because I bet you had never spoken to an Englishman sitting in a big truck on Interstate 70 on the Kansas-Colorado state line.
Blow that horn. There we go. There
Excellent.
We go.
Did you hear it?
Yes.
We heard it and so did everyone else. Wow, that sounds like a big old horn.
Now, how come you're driving that rig?
I beg your pardon?
How come you're driving that rig? What's going on?
Well, I did it for 30-odd years in Europe, and when I came over here, I was going to retire, and then the banks did their thing in 2008, and I came back to the only thing I know, truck driving, and I have now done 46 U.S. states.
And tell me how does truck driving compare in America versus in the UK?
Pretty much the same. It's the same old BS.
Do you get, I was going to say hijackers. I don't mean that. I mean hitchhikers.
You're not allowed to pick them up. The insurance companies won't let us carry people unless it's all prearranged. And if you actually get stopped by DOT, which is the Department of Transport, obviously, the equivalent of the MOT, they will actually ask for proof if you've got somebody in the cab that you're supposed to have them with you. And if you don't have the proof, they will remove them. So nobody really bothers picking them up.
And how do you while away the hours when you're driving for those long distances, aside from listening to us on talk radio?
Well, that's about all I do, really. Listen, I sit between talk radio and talk sport most of the time. I've got bored in the past and called James Whale. And as it was your last night, I thought I'd give you a call. I was going to do it on Friday, but I was in Alabama and my signal was not very good.
Oh, so fantastic. Now, tell me your favorite thing to eat when you're on the road, because I know different states have different treats in the truck stops.
I eat out of my refrigerator in the truck.
Oh, he's not playing games. You eat what, bangers?
I have bangers and chips, and I have bacon, and I have homemade cottage pie, and all sorts of stuff, and I just basically eat out of the truck. I do occasionally get pizzas out of the Flying J's, but that's about my only weakness. Most of them now, the truck stops are just fast food. They don't have mom and pop restaurants anymore, so most of them are SH1T for food.
Oh, yeah. And do Americans have a hard time understanding your Shakespearean accent?
Very often.
Yeah.
Very, very often. In actual fact, I do like to play a game on the CB radio. I talk to an imaginary friend and I use the old British CB slang and they haven't got a clue what I'm talking about.
Oh my. What kind of reception do you get? Do they like it or do they feel concerned and shaken by it?
They find it amusing, I think, most of them, you know. I mean, you'll get the usual remark, you know, what the hell are you talking about, you know, and you have to explain that you're talking to this friend in London. Of course you're not, it's an imaginary friend, but they don't know that. And it whiles away the hours.
I was going to say, I bet it can get quite lonely, can't it?
It can do, I mean, it's not like driving from London to Manchester, you know, it's only going to take 3 or 4 hours. I mean, you know, you can go for hours without talking to anybody. The roads are not as quiet as they used to be over here. There are a few where you're not going to see a car for a few miles, but I like this I-70. I'm out in the middle of nowhere, and all I can see is just nothing but green in both directions. But there's quite a bit of traffic on the road.
Where's home then,
Stuart?
Of course,
Stuart? You're not talking to them.
No, of course not.
I beg your pardon?
Where's home? Where's your base?
Joplin, Missouri.
Oh, how did you end up there?
The place that had the my ex-wife. She was never going to become a stiff-ass Brit, so we moved from the UK to over here because it was easier for her stiff-ass Brit to become a redneck than it was for my redneck to become a stiff-ass Brit. So now I'm a Britneck. At least that's what my friends call me.
It sounds like they hold you in a lot of affection.
I beg your pardon?
I said it sounds like they hold you in a lot of affection.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that. It was a little bit iffy.
Well, you can't understand the British accent anymore.
Exactly.
That's your problem.
He's Britnix.
I want to know if you've seen any weird weather. Like, you live in the middle of the Midwest. You live in tornado country, and you're driving through tornado country. Have you seen any twisters?
Yeah, I stood and watched the one that destroyed Joplin.
Oh, wow.
In 5 years ago? I never want to see anything like that again. It was almost 3 miles wide, and I think it was rated at 6. I mean, it took out half of Joplin.
My God!
I'm just looking at a picture.
That's amazing.
I beg your pardon?
I said I'm just looking at a picture of the devastation. My God. Talk about apocalypse.
Yeah. 167 people lost their lives, which is 167 too many, but it was Sunday evening and a lot of people were eating, because as you know, Americans like to eat early. They're not quite as leisurely about their dinner hours as us Europeans.
Right.
And there were a lot of people in restaurants and things, and the death toll could have been higher, but it was awful. I don't ever want to see anything like that again in my life.
And were you in the middle of it? Like, did you actually see the funnel cloud?
I was on the edge and watched it. I was actually, there were two Walmarts in Joplin then, and I was in the one that it missed. And I went out to the car to grab my phone and got back inside the doors, but didn't manage to get to the safe area in the store. And I actually stood in the doorway with the security man and watched it go by.
Oh, wow. It must be thrilling, though. I mean, this is spoken from somebody who's never been in one, but it sort of seems thrilling to see that kind of the huge scale of nature just losing its shiz. Or is it just completely terrifying?
Oh, I tell you what, the thought of that sort of force that is not man-made is absolutely awesome, really. Mm. I mean, it's frightening. But coming from Europe, you do not realize just what these things can do.
Yeah.
Until you actually see, you know, either the aftermath or, you know, the event taking place.
Yeah.
I literally had to change my underpants afterwards, I think.
Thank goodness you were in a Walmart. You could just get a new pair right then and there.
Absolutely.
And on that bombshell, yeah. I think we'll leave it. Listen, Stuart, we could talk to you all day, but I've got other people waiting to talk. Will you ring us again?
I will, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's been absolutely wonderful.
Hey, totally great.
And you just passed away a few Wiley miles for me, which was absolutely great.
Oh, good. I'm glad we could help.
Take care, Stuart. You keep your eyes on that road. Wow, imagine that job.
Yeah.
Miles and miles and miles, and those roads are straight, aren't they?
Yeah, and I tell you, Kansas is flat. So, there's not a lot of hilling and daling going on for him right now.
Thinking of you, Stuart, keep your head in the game. I'm sure I don't need to tell you that because this is an old pro at this thing.
Yeah.
0344 499 1000 if you want to give us a ring. Time is a ticking away.
The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle. You never know just where the conversation will take you. On Talk Radio.
I can see we've got Andre on hold. We've got Sean on hold. If you want to give us a ring, 0344-499-1000. I'm here. And we've got Katie Puckrick.
Yes, I'm here too.
Only like... Ooh, let's see. Let me do some quick math. Like half an hour left, really.
Yeah.
So get cracking. Don't hold back. If you want to have a quick word with me and Katie Puckrick, then you need to give us a ring. 0344-499-1000. We've got some text messages through that I need to address as well and tweets. Wilf McDougall, thanks for this, sent a message. Fed up of hearing everyone saying they love the show. To keep this fair and balanced, I'd like to argue the show's been crap. I don't actually have an argument yet, to be fair, but I'll work on it. Thanks for that. I think we do need to keep things balanced, don't we? Paul Ross has been saying nice things as well. Roger says, Threads is loads of fun, honest. Would I lie to you, Flippin' Kath? Totally disregard the time I called in and said about how grim it was. Yeah, I will never forget that. I feel like I've seen quite a lot of it. Big Les in Manchester wrote, Khrushchev's son said his dad told him during the Cuban Missile Crisis, if there's nuclear war, the survivors will envy the dead. Oh my God. Don't we know it? Don't we know it? So if you want to send us a message, you can do that. You need to either text talk and your message to 87222, and that'll cost you 25p per message on top of your standard network rate. Or you can tweet me for free. You can do at Flippin' Kath, at Katie Puckrick, at Talk Radio, any combination of those. But obviously, phones are always preferable. 0344-499-1000. Right, now, ip-dip-do. Do you fancy Andre or Sean?
I like the flair implicit in the name Andre.
Oh, my God. Well, you're about to be disavowed of that. Hey, Andre.
Hi, Casey. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. How are
Hello?
You doing?
Yeah, not bad, Casey. I'll call me Lappy open, actually, and Kath know what that means, if you ask her.
Oh, God, but it means trouble.
Tune for you. How's that, Casey? Is that all right?
Yep. Beautiful.
So far away? Well, before I fire away, have you heard of the Clash London Calling album?
Yeah.
Well, have a listen to this then. All right, ready?
All right.
It's a good job he's told you what it is first, to be honest.
I'll turn it up a little bit so I can hear it. But here we go.
All Lost in the Supermarket.
Yeah, do you like it?
I love it. I love that one.
Right, you've got it. I think it's one of the best on the album.
I like it. I think it's sort of melancholy. It's sort of urgent and sad at the same time.
Right, here we go. I'm all lost in the supermarket. I can longer shop happily. I came in here for that special offer, a guaranteed personality. Wasn't born so much as I fell off. Nobody seemed to notice me. We had a hedge back home in the suburbs, over which I never could see. As the people who live from the ceiling, screaming fight scarily. Hearing that noise was my first ever feeling. How it's been all around me. I'm all lost in the supermarket. I can't longer shop happily. I came here for that special offer, guaranteed personality. Motioned in, I feel the program. I save coupons from packets of tea. I got my giant discrepant album. Empty bottle, I feel a bit free. It gives you the holes and the punch in the walls, making noises for company. Long distance callers, my long distance calls, and the silence makes me lonely. I'm all lost in the supermarket. Hold on.
You just ran out of steam. You ran out of steam. You know, I like your delivery is so friendly. No, I think...
A couple of minutes of that. That's all I wanted to do. Is that all right, Katie, yeah?
It's fantastic. It's like you had this very affable, friendly approach. It wasn't particularly menacing. You had your own interpretation to it.
Katie, yeah? I like it. I really like that song. I think it's that along with Brand New Cadillac and all the others are really good, yeah?
Yeah. No argument
like
here.
Them?
Yeah. And it's interesting that tonight we're hearing... it's kind of Clash heavy tonight.
Yeah. Did you ever see them in America, Katie, when I was over there, or hear about them being over there?
Yeah, I heard about them being over there, but I didn't see them in America.
Oh,
I missed them. Yeah, it is a shame.
Yeah, I've seen them a lot of times over here. But I've definitely seen them.
Yeah.
Had I been over there, I wouldn't have missed it. I've seen David Daisy, and it looks really good.
Yeah. I have met Mick Jones. That's as close as I've. Yeah, he's a very nice man. Good. Yeah, he's really like a mellow guy.
Isn't he the guy that went out with Viv from the Slits?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
we,
right.
We had her on the show once.
Oh,
she's amazing.
Yeah.
Can I get a word in edgeways here?
Well,
I've seen the Slits supporting in the class once with different, when it was all women. The Slits supported the class. It was excellent.
Oh, yeah, that was a good bill.
And I see them, yeah. And the band were blinding. I mean, it's a shame about Joe Strummer, as I'm always going on about, everyone let you know. But, I mean, just one of them things, yeah, who's been, can't say meet any better person or better, like, sort of, you know, singer or songwriter is the best, him and Mick Jones.
Mm.
All right, I'll just get that in. And talk to you another time. Yeah, nice to hear you both.
Yeah, good to hear from you.
Bye, Andre.
Bye, Kath. Bye.
Every night he rings in, and often we'll get a performance from the Lappy.
And is it always Clash? Or?
Generally, but he also likes Morrissey.
Oh.
Yeah, despite the problematic...
And also, yeah, Morrissey and the Clash are diametrically opposed in their politics.
Yes, but, you know, Andre's a complex character.
Yes, aren't we all?
Let's talk to Sean. Hiya, Sean.
Hello, Kath. Hello, Katie. Doing all right?
Yes, doing very well.
Yeah, Katie's correct. I certainly don't have the flair in terms of my name in comparison to Andre.
Well, I hope you didn't take that personally, because once I was exposed to Andre's particular flavor, I'm now rethinking the flair comment. So
maybe you shouldn't have been so drawn in with the exotic name.
Yeah, so now all the flair goes to you. The flair is flowing in your direction, Sean.
That sounds pretty rad to me, mate. basically, as Kath might remember, I've phoned us a few times recently to talk to Ian about Paul McCartney. And we're sort of wax lyrical about McCartney and that sort of thing. I know sort of Ian gives Kath a bit of a hard time sometimes in terms of her music taste.
Huh. Just a bit.
I'm going to pick you up on this one, Catherine. A few months ago on Twitter, this must have been my March time, I think, you tweeted a track by Brigitte Bardot.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And I don't know what the track was, but I thought, do you know what, I'll give it a listen. And I was just like, this is pretty cool, actually. And for the next few days, I ended up sort of diving into that sort of quirky French, I'm guessing, 60s.
Like Serge Gainsbourg.
Music.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. So, I've got some music takes. I don't like Ian get it down.
I have, and he's frightened by it. That's why. He's intimidated. That's why he has to weave this tissue of lies that I've got no taste.
The Brigitte Bardot song? Was that 1969?
I think it was. I can't remember. I tweeted a few in a row. My Bonnie Clyde with Gainsbourg is one, and it's cool. And it's got that woohoo, which you will not get out of your head all day.
Yeah.
And there's another one called Moi Je Joue. I think it was that one I put on there as well. I mean, let's be fair, she cannot hold a tune, really. But there's so much more to her performances. You know, it's...
I like her whole deadpan thing.
Yeah.
It's like she doesn't really care.
No, she's too cool.
No, she's too cool for school.
And, you know, now she doesn't care, you know, that she is clearly kind of living a life that is by her own rules, you know, saying that she fell out with her goat because it raped the other one and all that sort of stuff.
I didn't know that.
She's a big animal lover now.
I knew she's an animal lover, but I didn't know that she was taking sides in the goat
she was
sexual harassment.
She was disgusted with its behavior.
Well, so she needs to have a word with Lucy Cook, who will tell her not to put attribute human motivations to animal behavior.
I don't think we can tell Brigitte Bardot anything anymore.
No.
I think she's living and marching to the beat of her own drum. No, but some of those tunes are really good. I also quite like, from that time, who was the one that did, you know, there's loads of them. So if you like that, let me have a think and I'll tweet some more once I've had a think about the really good one. There's one called Le Temps de l'Amour. I can't remember who it is. Hang on. Let me look it up.
French lady.
Yeah, it is. And she's really cool as well. And it's killing me because I can see her face.
Françoise Hardy. Yeah.
She's great. And, you know, a lot of it is about image as well. And it's just such a cool look.
She is really, I mean, now she is a performer, a real performer.
Yeah.
And
Jane Birkin as well. I mean,
she's a little more slapdash, but
that's always been part of the thing, hasn't
it?
When I lived in Paris, she was on television quite a lot, and she's still, you know, her French is impeccable, but she still has this kind of ditzy English ingenue thing going on.
French people make fun of Jane Birkin's French accent.
Probably, but that's just because it's...
They're snobby.
Yeah.
How? Here's my question, you guys. How come French people can have a strong French accent and everybody, all the English speakers think that they're so gosh darn adorable?
Yeah.
But then Americans, if we have our, you know, big honking American accent when we're trying to say, you know, si vous plaît, ou a le double v say, how come that isn't as cute and adorable?
Well.
As Brigitte Bardot saying... Ooh, I'm so sorry.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, lovely.
Americans are held up to ridicule quite a lot, but I think it's generally because we all really know deep down that you're the winners.
Not anymore.
Well, I mean, you were the winners. Hey, Sean, good to speak to you.
Cheers, thanks a lot.
Oh, God, Sean, he was so nice.
And he was so polite.
So polite. Not like Andre a minute ago going, I can't get a word in edgewise.
Oh, but you know what he's terrible. Honestly, Andre. 03444991000. Yeah, the accent thing. Again, when I was, because I studied languages at university, so I spent 6 months in Paris and 6 months in Spain when I was like 21-ish.
International call girl.
And yeah. God, if only it was a lot more boring than that. But there was, I used to live with this, I thought, extremely sophisticated older woman. She was probably about my age now, and single. And she was Parisienne, but she was a translator of Russian and German. And she had a Japanese boyfriend. She was just like living this hugely cosmopolitan life compared to what I was used to.
Yeah.
And the phone went one day and neither of us caught it. And there was this message left on the answer phone by one of my tutors from the British Institute in Paris. And he had been there 4 years and he's like an older guy, not very attractive at all. But she was completely smitten by the accent. And honestly, his accent was ridiculous. It was like the most English speaking voice, mais parlant en français comme ça, you know, it was like, ooh. And I just thought, you sound ridiculous to me. I thought we were at least supposed to try the accent. But she thought it was dreamy.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This really very English voice speaking French did it for them. So I think it goes both ways.
Yeah. I was dating this guy from Iraq once named Mustafa, very beautiful man. And we were talking about, you know, accents and cultural differences. It was a real kind of cultural exchange program of...
You're doing your bit for international relations.
Fluids, yes.
I've done that too.
And and Mustafa told me that as far as he was concerned, and a lot of Arab men he knew felt this way as well, the German accent, vava, voo,
really
hot stuff. So if you ever heard a woman speaking in a guttural, you know, German accent, that was what got his rough fluffed.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder why. Maybe it's just a completely different noise from the noise he's attuned to.
Well, or maybe...
Because each language has got like a tune to it, doesn't it?
I heard somewhere that Mexicans think that American English sounds like dogs barking. Which I think is
too
funny. But yeah, but maybe there's something like, you know how Arabic is quite kind of guttural and harsh and kind of throaty in the throaty. And I guess German is a little bit like that. So maybe there's something there. But I mean, I will grant you that Teutonic Nico delivery is quite compelling. That sort of like deep voiced, dominatrix sound. Maybe there's something like that going on.
And now we're back to the tone of women's voices.
The tone of women's voices. Look at how we go full circle.
Poor old Cundy. I do feel a bit sorry for him. He is hapless. Coming out with that nonsense. If you missed it earlier on, poor old Jason Cundy's been through he's been in the centre of a Twitter storm.
Yeah.
Which means like four people said that they disagreed with him. But he's had to issue an apology for suggesting that listening to a female commentator was a bit too much for the whole time, for the whole duration of a football match because of the tone of their voices, the high pitch. So poor old Jason. He's not the first bloke to say something like that, but he's probably the first bloke in a prominent sporting position to say it out loud.
Yeah, but it's 2018 as well. Like I don't know. I'm always surprised at those sorts of remarks because I just think I thought we moved along past all this.
Have you seen next door though? It's massively mannish through there.
It is a little bloke-tastic.
Oh, it totally is. Told you when I first moved here to work.
Yeah.
Walking through that newsroom, the Talk Sport newsroom, was a bit like the scene in Silence Silence of the Lambs where Clarice goes to the prison. The only woman for as far as the eye could see, and like, you could tell that it had been noticed, and it was an interloper.
Were there kind of nostrils flaring at your at your female, at the estrogen?
They were feathers ruffled, I dare say. They're used to me now. They know that I don't take any nonsense, but that's kind of the way you got to be. 03444991000 if you want to give us a shout. Otherwise, we're just going to carry on talking absolute balls. And I've got loads actually to go through, such as fans call for Fergie and Prince Andrew to get back together after she referred to her ex-husband as family, and a body language expert, I mean, so that means it's gospel, right?
Yeah, right.
Reveals the pair still share an intimate connection. Apparently Fergie, 59 in case you were wondering, posted a snap of herself with Prince Andrew, Beatrice at Royal Ascot, said she had a great day with her family and sending fans into overdrive. Supporters called for the pair, who divorced more than 20 years ago, to remarry. That to me is not supportive. They do live near each other, don't they, still? I think they were living in the same house for a while, although it's not like us living in the same house with our ex. The house is quite lengthy, you know.
Yeah, it's like living in a, yeah, like in a dorm in a giant university.
Oh my God. But, you know,
should they get back together by decree? The fans have decreed. It's like an arranged remarriage. Yeah. Is there such a thing as that? It would make the whole country happy. But who would it make unhappy? The Queen. She didn't really like Fergie. Is that right? Or am I just reading?
I don't think she appreciated the disruption.
The disruption was, I mean, she can roll with it now. I mean, my goodness, her own private life has been splashed all over the screen, mm-hmm. courtesy of The Crown, which I understand she watches.
Does she? Have you ever seen it? I tried to get into it.
Love it. Oh my gosh, such sloppy filth. That's outrageous.
I did like the Princess Margaret character in the ones I saw.
I liked her, and I liked the little sparkles of naughtiness between princey husband
Philip
and Queenie. Yeah, I don't know their real names. I just
they are real. I don't want to spoil this for you. Spoiler alert, but you can find out how it ends. Just have a look at the papers. But yeah, apparently, you know, this is the picture I'll show you. It's okay. A picture of, unusually, Fergie with her mouth open laughing. Mm. I'm not saying unusually, that's really cruel. But Fergie was always portrayed as the sort of good time girl, wasn't she? There was Diana, who was kind of coy and quiet and shy, although, of course, we realise years later that she was not none of those things, really.
Yeah.
And Andrew and Bill, and all laughing it up at the races, yeah, is where you might.
They're yucking it up. They're having a great time. Why not?
But that doesn't mean you should get back together. I always think there's a reason why you split up. I've never got back with an ex of you.
Have I gotten back with... Oh, I did, but it was under the influence of the one time that I took ecstasy, and it was really bad. It was like low quality, and within 5 minutes, I was just gurning and grinding my teeth. I did have that misleading sensation that the whole world was love, and I was feeling very generous and very open-hearted, and reconsidered all of the bad qualities of my ex and discarded them. Quite unwisely. So, yeah, I got back on the merry-go-round for another uncomfortable few rounds.
Oh, my God. How long?
I think it was another year, but there was a lot of drama. There was a lot of drama with this guy and, you know, a lot of issues and lots of very 20-something showdowns, like emotional showdowns, screaming, all that kind of thing. I don't do that kind of thing anymore. Screaming and public showdowns.
God, who's got the energy?
Yeah, who has the... I just need a nap. I mean, yeah. So, just say no, kids.
You do hear about people, especially now with Facebook and stuff like that, people getting back together who were together years ago, like when they were kids, 18, and then they split up, and then years later, probably after a marriage or two, they find each other again. I mean,
I had high hopes with a man on Facebook who I went to high school with. He might even be listening to the show right now.
Hi.
But he got in touch like the second he got wind that his wife was going to divorce him. And he was like, hey, remember me? Remember the fun times in high school? The cute notes. And I did remember that. I was like, oh, this is great. This will be great. Okay. This is what Facebook is meant to be doing. And we had a little banter back and forth, and that was great. And then I was like, oh, I'm really sorry to hear about the divorce, and you've got kids, and that's rough, and my heart goes out to you. And I was just about to type in Messenger, it's not easy getting back in the dating saddle, you know, at this time of our life. And just, and thank goodness I didn't write that, because the next thing he wrote was, I'm really excited to get out there because there's so many women in my age range who are so great. And I felt like one inch tall. I felt like, oh, I thought he was building up to like making some sort of announcement, like remember us and maybe we should explore something.
Turns out he was just trying to fill up his subs bench.
he was lining me up for the subs, which was a little disheartening. But hey, more power to you. And I have to say, I know I'm bitter about it. I'm saying this a little bitterly, but he's not wrong. There are a lot of great women out there for single middle-aged men. It does, the equation doesn't go the other way in my finding.
Oh, man. 03444991000. You can give us a ring for whatever reason. I mean, if you are that guy, quick. We haven't got long left. Hurry up.
Experience the unconventional, the unpredictable, and the completely unorthodox. The Late Night Alternative with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
Blimey, have you seen the time? We're nearly done.
Oh, gosh, it has been a gab fest, thanks to you and everybody else.
Oh, my goodness. Tell you what, though, we've just been sitting here warming up, really, waiting for Stan to join us, and finally he's arrived. Hi, Stan.
Good evening, all right?
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. Are you all right?
We're all right. What have you got for us, Stan?
Well, it's a bit of a double-edged one, this, right, because I'm on my way to home to do a job. I'm an engineer and I'm just on my way there to do it. I've not been called out. But I have my colleagues are waiting there for me. And we have a little bit of a debate that I don't know if maybe you can put to bed for us.
We can try.
What it is I like to have a bit of a sing-song, right? And they reckon I can't sing. But I think I can.
Okay.
What do you reckon, you be the judge? You've got to be honest, though.
Well, hang on a minute. I mean, if you really want to put your money where your mouth is, we could play S Word or Yes Word. I don't know how many people are still awake, but there may be an appetite for that. Have you heard this feature we've done in the past?
No.
Well, you start singing, we open the phone lines, and people will tell us what they think. Well, you've got to keep singing.
Right.
Are you up for that?
Oh, that wasn't expected.
No one's expecting the yes word or the S word, but come on, we might as well live dangerously. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'll give it a go. That'll show them. I feel like, yeah,
I can't guarantee it. They are brutally honest, all right?
Well, that's what I want. That's exactly what I need, then.
Okay.
I'll put up a shut up.
All right, then. Well, here we go. Let me just give the number out. So if you want to be... We want your opinion, please, for yes word or S word, and I'll just put you straight to air. Please don't say the actual S word. Just yes word or S word. Don't get me into trouble. I've got, like, 10 minutes left, and I'm nailing this at this point. Don't ruin it for me. 0344 499 1000. All right, Stan, what you got for us?
I'll do a Gordon Lightfoot number.
Okay, hit it.
Okay. Here we go. If you could read my mind, love, why'd it feel my thoughts could tell? Just like a no time movie, about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark, or a fortress strong,
with chains
upon my feet. Well, you know that ghost is me. I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost that you can't see. If I could read your mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell.
What do you reckon, yes word or S word?
I've listened to this guy and I've got to say he's utter shit.
How dare you?
That's not right. I'm not having that.
He's good.
Carry on, Stan. Ignore.
Yeah. I can't remember where I was now.
If I could read
my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could
tell. Just like an old time.
Go on, Nick.
I was just going to say sugar.
Thank you very much. Keep going, Stan.
I'm not doing any more.
I think you're great.
I think they're being very peevish, and you shouldn't listen.
I think they're jealous.
Of course they're jealous. I've got two more. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah.
All right, let's see what they got. What do you reckon? Hello, caller. Stunned into silence. What about this one? Hello?
we go.
There we go.
Thanks very much, Stan. You're a good sport.
No worries, Matt. Excellent.
I've heard Essa, I'm going to be honest. Thanks very much. Let's talk to Ian. Hi, Ian.
Hello. I thought it was good, but you two killed it when you started squealing out.
Oh, how dare you. We're so high-pitched. Fair play. Hello. Who's on this line?
Hello. Smudge from Reading.
Hey, Smudge from Reading. What you got?
I was ringing up to comment on the song. I never actually heard it.
Oh.
It was very so mellifluous. He was a real crooner. Yeah. He did a Gordon Lightfoot number.
There you go. Shame I missed it. I listened to it on the replay. But just wanted to say, excellent show, guys. Brilliant stand-ins for Ian. Shame he's coming back, really.
It's always a shame when they come back. The fun has to be over.
I'm a little crestfallen, I have to say, Smudge.
Looking forward to August. Hopefully you'll be on again.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I mean, we've had an S-bomb. I may be in trouble. Who knows? Let's get this phone call here. Hello, who's there on line 3?
It's John. I say, defo, yeso, wordo.
Oh, really? You liked it?
Beautiful.
He's going to be thrilled.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
So that's 2 yeas and 2 nays.
Yeah, so far. Hello, line 1.
Oh, hello. Is that me?
It's you. You're on.
Oh, sorry, Catherine. Oh, hi. Yes, for the, yes for the song.
Wonderful. I mean, that's love more it. Than one yes yeah. there. I think we can count
that's
those
three.
Over. I think
yeah.
that's a definite yes. Yeah. Thanks very much for that.
Lovely up. Great show.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Oh, we've got someone here on the phone. Who's that? Who's that on line 2?
Yeah, I just want to say it's not been great with the two ladies doing the show. And I can't wait for Ian Lee to come back because he's absolutely mad for it.
Your accent sounds a lot like Ian Lee doing my voice. I'm just going to leave that dangling there, ladies and gents. I think we all know what's going on there. It's called sabotage, and that's a so-called friend. Let's see what Maureen wants to say. Hey, Maureen.
Hey, I want to say yes to that man that was singing.
Ah, good on you, Maureen.
Yeah, only because, I like 60s music. I can understand what you're saying. All this up-to-date music, it all sounds the same to me.
Yeah, what's your favourite, Maureen?
I thought he was quite good for coming on the radio to do it. No, I thought he was good.
Hey, your voice sounds really familiar. Did you used to phone Ian a long time ago?
What, Ian?
Yeah, Ian Lee.
No, I've never phoned him before.
Oh, well, phone us again, Maureen.
I've talked to Paul Ross.
Have you?
Yeah, and Dan Whitten.
And what do you think of Paul?
I've never spoke to Ian, but I mean, I liked him in The Jungle. He did make me laugh.
Oh, he was good in that, wasn't he?
I know he was. I mean, I'm blind, but I mean, I thought he was good because I always listened to that programme ever since it started. I think it's hilarious. But I thought he was really good.
Ah, you're a belter. Will you ring us again, please, Maureen? I'd like to introduce you to Ian.
And I think you two girls are good.
Ah, thank you.
We're big Maureen fans. Thanks very much, Maureen. She's brilliant.
I like Maureen.
I want to keep her. 03444991000, but we've only got literally seconds. I'm sure Paul Ross is going to be invading the studio at any moment now, but actually, no, he's not, is he? For once. Normally he stands behind the door and I just see a dark shadow.
He comes in like a Joplin tornado.
He does.
A Joplin, Missouri tornado. He's not there, though. He is a force of nature.
You worked with him ages ago, didn't you?
Yeah, well, he was my boss on The Word. He was firm but fair.
Uh-huh. Was he bossy?
No. He was so charming, quick-witted. He was a good cop. He was the good cop.
He's been like privately, and I'm not saying anything. I'm not disclosing any kind of breach, any confidences here. But he's been really supportive and kind to both me and Ian, like behind the scenes.
Well,
he's a good fella.
He knows about talent, and he knows how hard it is. He knows it needs to be cherished and nurtured.
So what are we going to do? I'm not going to see you now for ages.
Well, I am going to miss our little Japanese meals that we've been enjoying, our big bowls of rice.
Yeah.
That I sort of eat myself into a carb stupor before I come in here, and then I start to wake up just about now.
It's been really fun.
Well, thank you for plucking me from obscurity.
Oh, man, as if.
I really appreciate it. And also just to have a little outlet with you and your delightful listeners. I love how you guys all know each other.
It gets that way. It's this special time of night, I think.
Well, you've all had your ups and downs together, and you all feel comfortable enough with each other to share it. I think that's a really beautiful bond.
It's a really cool job. I'm really glad that you could get a little taste of it this week.
Delicious.
Oh man, I'm gonna miss you. I have got a present for you in my car, but I couldn't bring it upstairs. It's a little heavy. I don't know how you're gonna get it upstairs in
a kitten. I love kittens.
How come you haven't got one? Because you really are a cat woman.
I am really such a cat botherer. Because I'm not allowed to in the apartment building where I live, but
they're awful quiet. Who's gonna know?
I tell you what, Catherine, if I had a cat, I would never leave the house. I would just be petting and feeding and staring into its little kitten eyes.
Oh, adorable.
Yeah.
One day, you know, both of our cat dreams will come true. I'm not allowed one. My husband is really not a cat man.
Well, can change.
The girls keep asking, and he says, well, is daddy your cats?
Oh, well,
he doesn't want the answer to that.
Yeah, he doesn't really. I was about to answer that, but.
No, they do linger a little bit long weighing up that decision. And some days I think it's definitely cat day.
Yeah.
I've had such a blast. Thank you to everyone. I just wanted to say I'm not going to go nuts or anything, because hopefully this won't be the last time. But I've had such a laugh doing this show, and it's been a real joy. And also it's kind of helped me slay a few little demons from the past. So thanks to everyone who's rung up, and thanks to everyone who said lovely things on social media. I know, social media. Who knew it could be so kind?
Yeah. It was a kind of a warm hug there.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll be back in my usual chair tomorrow. But don't think I don't appreciate how kind you've all been. So thanks very much indeed. I think I see the pitter-patter. I hear the pitter-patter of tiny feet. It's Paul Ross.
Oh, look at him.
Quick, save us from the schmaltz. I was going then.
Blimey. Excuse me, a midget. A Paul, I should say, a person with restricted growth. I don't know why I looked at you then, Kate. I can only apologise.
I'm enjoying the double denim that you're...
Oh, yeah. Well,
he can rock double denim.
If it's good enough for George Harrison on the cover of Abbey Road, it's good enough for me.
Well...
Also covers the beer belly.
It's good enough for
That's
me,
That's a
then.
Great book. We had that guy on who wrote that.
It's a lady.
Oh, the woman, right? We had her on about 3 weeks ago. Brilliant book.
Well, she was on just a minute
was
ago.
She?
Yeah, Lucy Cook.
Oh, I missed out the singing bit. Yeah. I was in the loo. So anyway, on the show today, we're continuing the animal theme going. We're talking to a brilliant guy, he's a presenter and well-known for things like Springwatch. He's been all over the world tracking down the last of the big beasts. Anacondas is one with sperm whales. So he's a fantastic guy. We're also finding out about the firefighting goats from Portugal. And I'll say no more about that, so keep you hooked on that one. It's kind of an obvious solution, but it's a brilliant, brilliant initiative. Basically, they're cropping the grass down, because goats eat very close to stop by brush fires.
Amazing.
Yeah. So there we have goat milk on tap, and the firefighters are kind of taking days off.
Brilliant. It sounds
well done. You don't need me to patronise. You know you're good.
Thanks.
Excellent. People are already saying, Ian who? That charlatan's cold gig has now been busted.
Wow. Thanks, Paul. Listen, we'll be listening on the way home. It's always a great show. Take care, and night night, and I shall see you tomorrow. Thanks,
see you
guys.
See you soon, Casey.
Bye. See you.